Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring. Dave Duenas with my co-host Gable Montoya and our producer David Chen, who works the switchboard. So if you call in, it's going to be Mr. Chen who answers and asks you what you want to talk about here on the radio show. And then he'll patch you in and then allow me to know who I'm going to speak to. Put it up on Twitter sometimes. You know, when you're typing, you're going pretty fast. You sometimes can misprint or misspell certain words. So I just love it when the fans catch on to something that I misspell, like grab. I put something else, and you know, they're making fun of me. So anyways, that's why I was laughing here.
Okay.
Leave it in the ring. But hey, you know, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of fights coming up. Canelo's back in the ring or in Mexico against Rhodes. You know, we did a Bigfoot search on Angulo, and Gabriel Montoya was able to locate him in Mexicali, Mexico, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. If you haven't had a chance to go on maxboxing.com, Gabriel Montoya's article about Angulo, you know, the talk to him about what's going on immigration-wise and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a good read-up. It's only part one. Part two should be coming up a little later, I believe, next week. Right, Gabe?
It'll be out Friday night. Actually, and
well,
it'll
there you
be
go. Friday night,
Saturday. Yeah, so it'll be. And the second part is more about what his future is. I know it's already kind of broken that May 20th, or rather August 20th, he'll be fighting in Mexico. But there's a few little details about that in the article. Nothing much, you know, but about the same. Just who's going to pay for it, how it's going to go down, what Angulo's willing to do to fight, and a lot of just his feelings about watching the landscape and what he's been thinking while he's been away and what he's been doing while he's been away. So part two is definitely shorter. I know some people were like, wow, that was like part one and it was 5,500 words. That's what my editor said anyways. It's like, good Lord, man. But, you know, it was my attempt to really tell both sides of the story simultaneously. You know, if I had just told Angulo's side, it'd be 2,500 words. But I had to tell Gary's side. I had sources from HBO talk to me. There was another anonymous source, but then there was all the lawyers for both sides, you know, Leon Margolis, Gary Shaw's lawyer, and then Angulo's immigration lawyer, Kelly O'Reilly, as well as his business manager, Michael Miller. So it was like, you know, a lot of people had something to say. And then Angulo himself talking, and Gary Shaw as well. It's, you know, give it a read. I think it really just kind of boils everything down, kind of shows the way the media didn't really cover the story thoroughly. And kind of labeled Angulo, and through the message boards, I think everybody all ran with those stories, and that became the official story. And this is an attempt to kind of give you the real official story. This is Angulo's side as well as Gary Shaw's side, and kind of just let the reader decide for themselves what's real and what's not.
Absolutely.
But you also learn a little bit about immigration law in it as well. So it's a long read, but I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah, you know. Definitely, if you want to learn some immigration laws, you want to get a good read out of Gabriel Montoya's finding of the Mexican Bigfoot, El Perro Alfredo Angulo. But, hey, let's talk some boxing here. You're going to have Jason Litzau get back on HBO, and he's going to be facing Adrian Broner, who a lot of us believe he lost to Daniel Ponce de Leon. Daniel Ponce de Leon immediately after feeling himself, hey, look, I won the fight. But I'm always giving advantages away. I'm going to move back down to a lower weight class where, you know, he says, I still feel strong. He, you know, didn't have a problem making the weight where he did face Broner, who, you know, who a lot of folks said that he was a bore fest in that fight, you know, and I can't disagree with them, but he's getting in with a guy that's exciting. An exciting Jason All-American boy Litzau, who surprised a lot of us, you know, in his past recent fights. And, you know, Litzau saying, look, this is my time, a very strong, fast, durable, some say he shouldn't be boxing because he is punch drunk when he speaks. He has a really bad slur, worse than mine, I think, you know. And a lot of people are just going, you know, how much more can this guy endure? How much more can this guy dish out? You know, I'm going to say he's a little bit in the safer mode when he's going against the problem here. Because Broner's biggest problem has been kind of very... I would have to say reserve. I think that's the correct word of using his style right now, seeing his last performance, right, Gabe? He's a very reserved puncher, boxer puncher. Doesn't waste a lot of punches. He likes to set you up, but he kind of tends to wait a little too much. Where Jason Litzau was a really reckless fighter when he came out in the scene on ESPN. He was one of the headliners for ESPN, but he's moved up on the ladder, having his success over Rocky Juarez, you know, and he continues, keeps doing it, keeps just giving you more and more. And now he's explosive, but he's more composed. You know what I mean? He's more, he's not combustible where it's going to be all over the place. It's a contained explosion when he does leash out his combinations here. How do you like this matchup between these two guys here?
You know, I think that the Broner is going to look to make a statement. You know, he heard the criticism, and whether he believes it or not, that he's boring or this and that, you know, the proof was in that fight. He played it very safe. But I think that he's going to look to make something of a statement and kind of come out and put it on Litzau. And you know, the book on Litzau is he's got a bad chin. You know, he's almost like the Flushing Flash, and not in terms of of accomplishment, you know, of Kevin Kelly, who's a champion, hell of a fighter, but in terms of he had all the tools to make fights easier on himself, and yet Litzau would always go in there and try to impress and end up getting hurt. And so I think that there's a danger there with Litzau, you know, because now he's learned how to box, how to be safe, stay within his comfort zone, and use his length to you'll keep a guy at bay using his jab, setting up his speed. With Broner, we don't really know what his chin's like. We haven't seen him really get hit. We know he was very cautious about approaching Ponce de Leon and probably felt his power at some point. But this fight could go two ways. It could be very entertaining in that Broner tries to make a fight out of it and goes for it and Litzau accommodates him and we get an early knockout. Or it could be a bore fest where Litzau tries to box and stay safe, pick his spots, and Broner fights exactly the same kind of fight that he did when he fought Ponce de Leon, and a safe points victory where he doesn't take any chances. I tend to think it's going to be kind of a split the difference. It'll go a little later. I think Litzau gets stopped, but I think Broner is going to be a little more aggressive here in boxing his way inside on Litzau and then doing some work coming in. He's not much of an infighter, Broner, but that mid-range game and the long-range game seem to serve him pretty well, and I see him stopping Litzau. I think he's just a physical class above. He's younger. He's fresher. I think he's a little bit stronger. And he'll be a little more used to the big stage this time around. I think the last time was a lot to throw at him, putting him in front of 12,000 people in Anaheim. We're all screaming for Canelo. He's on first time on HBO. In that kind of setting, anybody can kind of fight out of their, you know, out of their character, I think. I've seen him be more aggressive in that fight. So I'm kind of hoping for the best for him. You know, I don't think he's as shitty as people tend to think he is.
You know, I never thought that he was a bad fighter. To tell you the truth, you know, I am leaning kind of what you're saying here. You know, the big stage, I think a lot of people don't understand that. You know, you had so many fans there at the Staples when Canelo was fighting. And, you know, too, you had a lot of Mexican fans out there rooting for the Mexican fighters. You know, and him going in with a very awkward fighter as Ponce de Leon is, really hard to time him. Find your range on a guy that's very awkward, doesn't really do the traditional boxing come forward stance, you know, and I think it's very difficult too to understand how big of a puncher he is, because the guy throws punches kind of off balance a little bit, you know what I mean? So he doesn't really look like he has a big punch, but he does have heavy hands, and I think that's what Broner was able to find out, you know. With Jason Litzau, though, you know, I'm going to tell you, you know, Jason, to me, he's been put in with the right opponents. Even though he's been picked against, he's been put in with the right opponents here, you know. And now I think he's facing somebody a little bit more younger, fresher, somebody that's really going to box and is lanky. Somebody that's going to use his range, somebody that's going to time him, somebody that's going to counter him, somebody that's going to make you know, Jason Litzau to revert back to what he was once was, which the guy was explosive and aggressive, and he's going to make mistakes. You know, the thing, though, is that can Broner hold up to the punch that Jason Litzau throws? You know, he's a really strong kid. He's still got speed and power, in my opinion, and I think that if he's able to tap the right buttons, that he can hurt the problem, you know, and that's what's going to be the problem in this fight, is how well is he going to react to a guy that is, you know, a big, strong, fast fighter himself, and is still hungry. I mean, this kid, Jason Litzau, the All-American boy, you got to admit, this kid is still on the rails for a reason. He's on that track still running, you know, on that mile for a reason. He's a hungry kid. He doesn't, just because he's sound shot, he hasn't looked like he's shot, in my opinion. He still looks like he's still able to hold it well together. And having children and settling down and getting married really has made a big impact in him. It's made a major change, not just in his life, but in the gym, that kind of leads up into the ring. I like him in this fight, to tell you the truth. Broner, to me, is going to have to be boring. He's going to have to allow Jason Litzau to be the aggressor, the lead dancer in this fight. But when you let somebody that wants to lead, that can lead, and that's had lead before, and has been in bigger fights and bigger situations, sometimes you're allowing them to do what they normally like to do regardless. And that could be a little dangerous, and that could be a problem, in my opinion, for Broner getting in with Jason Litzau, Gabe. I don't know. I think Jason Litzau may have won a little bit up on Broner in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, if he has to, you know, if Broner has to be boring, he shouldn't have any problem doing that. And, you know, he just fight like he did the last time. Although, I, you know, I've seen a lot of tape on him, and there's a big difference between fighting, you know, a prospect guy that you're supposed to beat and fighting, you know, he's stepping up in class. I mean, you know, Litzau's got world-class experience. He's been in with top guys, you know. He hasn't always won. But, you know, if you're not that, if you're not top shelf, he'll let you know real fast, you know, because he'll know and he'll exploit that. I think it's going to be a good fight. You know, Jason's always an action guy. Even when he tries to be safe, there are moments where he, you know, the Caballero fight, that was a fun fight, you know. I think it was more fun because none of us could believe that Jason was winning. You know, we'd heard all this build up. It was kind of like watching Paul Williams lose to Carlos Quintana. And
yeah.
You know, after he had just beaten Margarito. And I was sitting ringside for it going, are you freaking kidding me? Like, he's actually getting beat. And it almost made the fight better than it was, because it wasn't all that exciting of a fight, but it was just shocking, you know. I think this fight will be fun. I think there'll be some action to it. I think somebody's going to get knocked down. It could be Broner. We could find out about his chin. Because, you know, honestly, I couldn't tell you if he's got one. You know, because I haven't really seen him beat it.
That's the thing with me, is that I still think there's a lot of questions out there for Broner, in my opinion, that we really don't know yet. I mean, we've seen a very collective calm, a guy that's not going to pick up and react to the crowd, almost Chad Dawson-like, you know? Doesn't feed off what the crowd's going to do. You know, the boos and the ahs and the wows and the come on, man. Beers being thrown into the ring, which is probably what happened if he wasn't facing Jason Litzau. Because he's just one of those really focused individual young men. He's coming to do a job that he's used to doing on his own. But he's going to be facing a guy that likes to dance to his own beat as well, Jason Litzau. And that's the one thing about this All-American kid that I do like, is that his attitude matches his boxing style. You know, he could be a really smooth, funny guy, but at the same time, you could really read the thoughts in his face expression. You know, if he feels like he's losing, you're going to see it in his face, and you're going to see it be kicked up in gear in his boxing. You know, he becomes aggressive. He gets wild. He opens up. That's where Broner wants to get him to. That's the deep end of the pool. He wants to try to, you know, lurk him into that side, okay? Get him out of the 4 feet. Get him into the 11 feet where his feet are not underneath and able to touch the floor. this fight, in a lot of ways, can go in so many different directions, in my opinion. It can go boring because Jason Lithgow decides to become a counterpuncher and a guy that doesn't want to risk it all anymore because he sees what's more at stake, him beating a Golden Boy fighter like Adrian Broner. Or he can go all for it and make these dumb amateur mistakes that he's done in the past. You know, which we all had written him off about because of the fact that he did a lot of mistakes that we didn't agree on. And he was getting knocked out. That's the good thing about Broner is that this kid has been knocked out because he's a guy that's opened up and has been really careless about covering his chin. Or you get a guy that is going to match him skill for skill for the beginning and then go for broke. Because to me, that's what Lithgow has to do. You got to try to measure him out. You got to fill him out, but not too much and not too long. Because then what's going to happen is you're just going to end up trending into following his game plan, Broner's great game plan, and then you're going to get stuck in the mud with that game plan. And you have seen this many times here, Gabe, where a guy decides to fight the other guy's fight for a few rounds, but then all of a sudden it's like Twilight Zone. They get stuck into that time zone. They can't seem to shake it off.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and that's the thing with Jason is, you know, a lot of his fights, it's like he's fighting one way, and he gets hit a couple times, and it takes over for him. He just, you know, all right, I'm going to be in a war now, and he just goes for it. And he's got to fight that impulse. I think he's got to, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's a little bit taller. He's got the length. I mean, he could box from the outside and box safe. You know, I think to try to go to war with Broner might work for somebody with a different style. Say if he was fighting like a Ponce de Leon who had to go to war, said, you know what, I'm not going to outbox this guy. I'm not going to outquick him. I'm going to go beat him up like Jose Luis Castillo, Floyd Mayweather. You know, I'm going to combat his finesse with power. In Lithgow's case, he can be a finesse fighter. He can be a speedy guy and a counter puncher. And I think that might be, depending on, you know, we'll know in the first round who's faster, you know, who's a little bit sharper, and who can get to who, you know, from long distance. And then you kind of have to adjust on that. But I just don't see Lithgow being successful in being the aggressor and being the puncher. You know, particularly in Mexico, I think if he's a counterpuncher and somewhat aggressive but stays within his pocket, that might go over well, better there than what Broner does. He's really going to have knocks against him being an African-American fighter who likes to move around, who showboats just a little bit. That's not going to go over well in Mexico. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the judges...
That's why I said the bears may fly into the ring. Mexico is known. Hey, if they're not happy, the Mexicanos in Mexico, man, are known. If they're not happy with a fight, they're going to start throwing bottles and beers and cigarette butts, you name it. Whatever's around and stuff is going to be thrown into that ring. So that's why I said it's a good thing they got Jason Litz out there. Hopefully he makes a fight out of the fight between those two guys, you know.
Yeah, it's like the first time, you don't have to worry about bullets. You just got to worry about flying cervezas. You know, it's just going to be. Somebody was asking, are you going to Mexico? No. Like, how many times do I got to say that? Unless they, you know. Yeah, I mean, it would take, like, you know, Tito getting in a hot tub time machine and fighting Oscar in Azteca Stadium, you know, in a rematch. Maybe then you'd get me to go.
Yeah, then maybe then, exactly. But this fight here, I don't know.
Put them on a Yeah. Salvador Sanchez on the undercard, you know, yeah, I'm there, you know, but not junior,
end up,
you know.
You might end up the second Bigfoot missing out there in the boxing world, along the side of Angulo, you know, heading out to Mexico.
Seriously.
No.
To close out that subject, because I'm sure people, you know, we're probably not going to go back to it, the Angulo thing. I mean, people are waiting for part two, I know, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a spoiler. His visa has been approved at this point. Now he's waiting for all – it's basically a long process. If you had a visa, he had a P-1 visa, right, which is basically for entertainers and athletes. It's kind of the basic entertainment visa that movie actors or whoever used to come over. That if he would have gone back to Mexico before it expired last March – and began the paperwork, it'd have been no problem. It would have probably just gone through, according to his lawyers. You know, the other side says something else, so I won't even get into it. Just read part one. It would have been approved. It didn't. They let it expire. And so when that happens, you got to go back to Mexico. You got to prove that you didn't stay in the country illegally, willingly, trying to avoid the law, which he had two fights on HBO with an expired visa. And you basically just go to the back of the line. That's why a lot of this has taken so long, because there are quote-unquote other issues at play here. That's probably because he fought, you know, here twice without an expired visa. And so he's basically waiting. It could be, quote-unquote, from Mike Miller, it could be 2 months, it could be 2 weeks, it could be 2 years, it could be never. We're just waiting for basically somebody to approve him to set up a meeting for so he can meet with the consulate again. He's already met with them once, and for him to be approved. So they seem very hopeful that he's going to be fighting in the U.S. and get this visa. And also, the last thing was that there was a in part one, there's a mention of him being deported back in 2006, and that charge has come back. That's what Gary Shaw's side says. That charge came back, and that's why he couldn't get his visa. The lawyer now, Kelly O'Reilly, said, look, flat out, if that were true, I would have never taken this case because it would be unwinnable. And so with that said, I mean, just take that for what it is. But for those Angulo fans out there, there's hope that Beto may return. Certainly he'll be fighting in Mexico if he doesn't.
So yeah, I heard some of the rumors about that, but we'll find out, see what happens. You know, maybe we'll find, maybe we can get somebody represented on both sides to get on the show here and talk to us a little bit about that. Because I know some fight fans do want to hear from them to see what's really going on. But like I said, you can catch Gable's article if you haven't had a chance. Go ahead and catch it.
It's pretty expensive. Box. I mean, I'd like to get them on, but you know, a lot of it too, you know. There's a lot of background. There's a lot of people that didn't want to talk on the record. So a lot of times some of the stuff I'm writing is based on off the record, not really off the record, but like, look, I'm going to give you background, but I don't want to go on the record. This is this. If you really want a full overview of the whole story, you know, I'm not just pimping my own article, but read the article, because it really takes you from that last fight to when part two is done to the present. And it gives you everything you really want to know about what's going on with this situation. Some parties may say there's a couple other things that haven't been mentioned, but I'd be hard-pressed to think what they are.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we got a lot of stuff here to talk about on Leaving the Ring. If you want to call into the show and speak to us here and talk boxing, of upcoming fights or any of the subjects we've been talking about, you sure can. Phone lines are open, 347-215-7598. And, you know, there's a lot of subjects I want to talk about. One is Sergio Martinez is finally getting his fighting date, October 1st on HBO, against a European fighter, a middleweight champion named Darren Barker. We'll get a little bit into that, but I know some fight fans want to talk about Canelo versus Rhodes. So let's patch in Chris. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, brother. Good, how you doing?
All right. About the Canelo Alvarez fight versus Ryan Rhodes, I've seen Ryan Rhodes fight a little bit on YouTube, and from what I can see, seems like he's going to give, you know, Alvarez a little bit of test, you know, knowing that Alvarez is a very aggressive fighter, and Rhodes is the type of fighter who he likes to throw counter shots, or almost like a Prince Ahmed leaping, like, uppercut type thing that he likes to throw. I think he knocked Jamie Moore out with it or something like that, but I'm thinking it'll be a tough test for Alvarez, but I'm picking Alvarez to win by maybe late stoppage or a decision. You know, maybe Alvarez, if he wins, I would like to see him fight Lattimore or somebody like that, maybe step it up a little bit more, somebody in that range. As far as the Lidzow and Broner fight, I'm picking Broner. I think it'll be a competitive fight, but you guys are definitely right. Lidzow's the type of fighter, like, once he gets hit, he just starts to throw wild. And I think in this fight, he's going to see that he can't do the same thing to Broner that he did to Caballero, because Broner's a very relaxed fighter, and he's pretty slick. And he's probably going to counter Lidzow a little bit, maybe stop him, or just by decision. So I'm picking Broner and Alvarez this weekend.
There you go. What do you got there, Gabe? Who are you picking for these fights?
I've got Broner by late stoppage. I've got and I kind of laid out my reasons before. I just think he's younger, he's stronger,
right?
Probably a little faster, and I think he's going to want to really make a statement in this, because I mean, But granted, he doesn't really need to because he stunk out the joint on HBO and they brought him right back. But, you know, he's an Al Heyman guy, and so he's going to get those HBO dates. But in terms of the other fight, you know, I think Ryan Rhodes is a guy, and I was actually shocked. Like Steve on the next round this week, he picked Ryan Rhodes to win, but he said that Canelo would get the decision. And I think that's kind of accurate. I think that Rhodes is going to be a real tough test for Canelo, who doesn't deal well with people that move. And I think Rhodes is going to use that. He's going to use his experience. He's going to use his legs. The question will be in the back end of the fight, with how much Rhodes uses his legs early, how much Canelo is able to pressure and get to Rhodes' body to kind of soften him up. He is 34. He's been stopped twice before, but it's been a long time. I think he's on like a 13-fight win streak over several years. This is a top-level talent. You know, he's got good power. He's the kind of guy that can catch you, hurt you, and get you out of there. I don't think it's necessarily one-punch power. And you know, people are saying that Canelo's got a great chin, but kind of like Chavez Jr., he showed a good chin against a guy in Matthew Hatton that was a welterweight fighting at 150 pounds that had no business fighting above welterweight. Doesn't have any power at that weight either. So we're going to find out about Canelo's beard. You know, we're going to see if he can get hurt. I mean, Mazzel-Cotto hurt him. So I don't see why Ryan Rhodes, who's got a little bit more speed and certainly more power than Cotto, can't hurt Canelo. But I think it's going to be a tough fight. I'm going to go Canelo by decision, but that's kind of just going with, you know, where they're at, who everybody wants to win in terms of everybody being HBO and Golden Boy and the WBC. And, you know, I'm going to say Canelo by decision, but I think it's going to be close, and I think there could be an argument made that Ryan won the fight.
You know, I think Chris hung up already before I can even talk to him, but this is what I think here. I know I like Broner in this fight, definitely do, but I got to go back with Jason Litzau, and the reason why is because both of you guys have mentioned he's very patient, kind of laid back, and he'll wait. I think if he does that, and he does that a little bit too much waiting to me to compose a lot of problems for Broner. Reason being is because Litzau will become comfortable. He's not one of those kind of fighters that's shy. He's not a shy guy. He's going to let his hands go. And letting his hands go could do a little bit more damage, you know, than what you would want, you know. And I think that's what Broner, being young and fresh, yeah, that's definitely, you're absolutely right. But when you got punches coming at you and you're not countering it as much and you're waiting, the points kind of stack up. And that's going to have to do something for Broner. He's going to have to normally do is try to come from behind and land some really heavy shots, you know, which he can do against Litzau. But I think that by Litzau leading in the dance, it can overwhelm Broner. And to me, that would lead to Broner being broken down systematically by combinations and punches from a guy that doesn't punch all that soft. You know, Litzau to me is a decent puncher, strong puncher. We've seen that, you know, and that question there leaves to Broner. Is he going to be able to withhold to a guy that throws pretty well hard shots? So I'm going to go with Litzau. I think Litzau takes this fight. Now, going with Ryan Rhodes versus Alvarez Canelo, you know, I tell you what, in the beginning I was like, I'm not really sure about Rhodes, but I went back and I got to look at his stance here. You know, he's coming in the southpaw stance. He can switch and hit. I don't know if you saw that, Gabe. You know, he could you know, orthodox. The thing I don't like that he does is sometimes he will allow you to close the distance without even trying to keep you out with a jab. What he does is he tries to catch your jab rather than him sticking out a stiff stick to keep you away. You know, he's not afraid to allow you to close that pocket there in the trade with him. He does got good footwork. He likes to counter. He likes to shoulder roll a lot. And Canelo is a guy that's really needs a guy to do that. You know, he needs his dance partner to kind of stay away and not throw many shots so that he can build up his work rate. So I like Canelo in the fight, but I also definitely like Rhodes in this fight. The thing I like about Rhodes is he throws a really good right hand shot to the body. You know, and Canelo is a big, sturdy, thick kid, but you could still take away a little bit of those soccer legs that he has, you know, where he's walking forward. And I haven't seen anybody really work the body of Canelo yet. I think Rhodes is going to really test that body, and he's going to test them with that even though they're going to be close, like I said, Rhodes will allow you to be close. That shoulder roll that he has, I really like the way he moves, you know. He knows how to use the ropes fairly well. He registers his back going back to those ropes fairly well, and he's able to move out of there and still counter. His jab, though, is not there, and I think that's going to be the big problem for me, is that his jab is not going to do anything. He doesn't really do anything with his right hand, you know. He kind of more or less uses that left hand to find everything. He knows it's a range finder for him, and it's also his power hand, you know, where he uses his right hand. Canelo has nothing to worry about. I could be wrong. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, Canelo is a guy. I find him incredibly limited. He's a guy that just, from what I heard from his sparring, he worked a lot with Gennady Golovkin up in Big Bear, almost exclusively with him, who's a WBA, I think, interim middleweight champion. Or title holders, I like to call them. But it was, a lot of it was probably inside game from what I was told. Because the other guy that was sparring with him was let go because he was moving too much and boxing too much.
Canelo, right,
has,
I remember that.
With guys, yeah, that has. And I won't say his name because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But but basically, this is not a guy I think of as a boxer, you know. And Canelo was a guy that if you move on him, he's going to have trouble because he doesn't, yeah, he uses that left hand like a rangefinder. You know, he's got that right hand. He does use the left hook, but in terms of a piston jab, Canelo doesn't have it. Now, I talked with Abel Sanchez over email about the progress of Canelo and his assessment of him. He said he was in decent shape when he got to me. He was about 165 pounds. He trained up in Big Bear for about 6.5 weeks. He'd already been training for like 4 weeks down in Mexico, and then he came up and trained and sparred with Golovkin, which, you know, Golovkin, I don't know if anybody's seen him, but he's a hell of a fighter. He's kind of like Pirog in the sense that he doesn't fight like a traditional Russian. He's got some slickness to him. Good fighter. I think he's a guy that will be a top guy in about 2-3 years, maybe two. But with Canelo, what Abel Sanchez said was that he worked on his speed, worked on his endurance in particular, a lot of little things, and that didn't really add slickness or anything, but it sounded like he got him more fluid, which Canelo is a lot of things, and fluid is not one of them. Those good combinations, but he's just very stiff in the upper body. There's way too much muscle going on there, and so he looks very tight. He doesn't move his head, particularly late in a fight. That's what's going to be so interesting about this fight, is Canelo's technique kind of goes out the window the longer the fight goes. His head stays very stationary. And regardless of what Abel Sanchez was able to do with him in 6.5 weeks, I find it hard to believe that deep in a fight with an experienced guy that can punch, if Rhodes hasn't taken too much damage and is still effective late in the fight, I'm going to find it hard to believe that Canelo is going to use all the things that Sanchez taught him and use them well in the back end of the fight.
Yeah,
it's going to come down to puncher's chance, I think, late in the fight.
Well, the puncher's chance would have to go with, I don't know. I don't see Canelo really putting a lot of damage to Ryan Rhodes. It's just because, you know, look, there's not that much of a difference in size to me. Ryan is 5'8.5", and going to Canelo Alvarez, who's only 5'9", I believe. I think that's what they have him recorded.
Right.
Ryan, he's coming off of a four streak of KOs. Okay, before that he had two unanimous. He went the distance, and then he had another KO after that. You know, this is a guy that hasn't lost since 2006 against Gary Lockett, and after that he's been on a really high winning streak. I mean, I never count the four or five fights, you know, that are put in front of him after a loss, because a lot of times a matchmaker and a manager, what they want to do is they want to rebuild back the confidence. But on his fourth fight, he went in for a British light middleweight title, and he got a KO on the ninth round. Defending it, he went on unanimous decision. Defending it again, unanimous decisions. And after that, he was put in with some decent names out there. Not familiar to us, but familiar to the European scene. He was able to get KOs, you know. To me, he's the guy that has a pretty good, decent, bigger punch than Canelo. Canelo, to me, has been fighting smaller men, in my opinion. Even moving up to junior middleweight division, 154, he's still fighting guys that are smaller men. Rhodes, to me, is the guy that is going to really test to see whether or not he's the real deal. Is Saul Alvarez the real deal? Does this guy should be legitimately called a junior middleweight champion? Canelo, to me, has a lot to hold up to, especially being in Mexico, okay, in Jalisco, where there is the fight's going to be at. He's got a lot to hold up, you know, because he's going to have his peers there watching. He's going to have a lot of eyes around the world watching this fight. And he's going to have another guy that's pretty big that's going to be standing across him that's looking to tear this kid's head off. I don't know. I'm going to have to... Man, I'm going to wait. I want to hear what other fight fans think about this fight, man. But right now, I got to be honest with you. I think I'm going with Ryan Rhodes. And I can't disagree with Steve Kim saying that he's going to be the winner, but Canelo is going to get the decision just because of the fact that, you know, Ryan's going into hostile territory, deciding to fight. You know, not on even grounds, in my opinion. But let's see what some other fight fans have to say. Let's patch in D. D, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother? D, you there, brother? You're live right now. I can hear you, D. What's cracking, brother? He might have... He might have a bad connection here with D. So we have to try him back. Let's see. Let's patch in Chris. What's up, Chris? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah. My phone had died last time I was on here. It got cut off. I just, you know, whenever you guys get a chance to talk about that Martinez, and the guy that he's fighting, I forgot his name. I'm sorry about that. But
Darren Barker.
Yeah.
What's his name? Barker. Okay. I know he's I seen little clips of him as well. He seems like a, you know, pretty good fighter. You know, he kind of like has pretty good reflexes and he's pretty solid. You know what I mean? I don't think he'll beat Martinez, but he seems like a not very stationary like Zenzurek was, you know, kind of European style. So I think the way his style is will give, you know, Martinez a little bit of different looks.
Yeah, you know, I think, too, overall, he's got a aggression to him, even though he is a little bit slick, like you're saying. He's got nice upper body movement. He seems to have some good power. I think the most important thing with him is he's got a following, and the following probably will travel. You know, I was talking to Luda Bella today about it, and he said it really just came down to, because we were talking about the different fights and different things for Martinez, who just signed a six-fight deal with Lou. And Lou said, look, you know, six fights doesn't mean 6 years. You know, we're looking to fight three
right.
times within the next 12 months. You know, they want to fight often, and it's going to have to come down to doing something other than an HBO. And Lou said, you know, we may do a fight in Argentina. That's something that we really want to do. And actually, he wanted to go over to the UK for this fight. Against Barker, because Barker has such a big following that they would have done great money at the gate, you know. And they're, so they're kind of looking, I think, in a sense, to maybe make Martinez a little more international. And maybe he's going to have to go and be a road warrior a little bit, but he doesn't exactly have a following here. I mean, one person I talked to did say they were at both the Paul Williams fight and the Sergey Zenzirik fight. And they said that it was interesting that, you know, there was a lot of people there at the Williams fight, the rematch, for Williams. It was a very pro-Williams crowd. But the nature of the way Martinez won seemed to win over a lot of those people, because there was just as many, if not more, people at the Zenzirik fight in Foxwood. And that
yeah,
was pro-Martinez. So
yeah.
I think he's developing a following, particularly on the East Coast where he's fought a lot. But it was interesting that they were willing to go to the U.K. But I think Barker brought the U.K. TV rights with him, from what I understand of the deal. And so there's going to be some of that money divvied up, you know, in this. And real quick, just to clear up, I know people are saying, what about Pirog? And I'm one of those people, and I asked Lou that. And this is
we
the way they look
it.
At it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference, you know, because I was saying, look, didn't the WBC take away Martinez's belt too, just like you guys are saying about the WBO? And this, there's a key difference. It looked almost like the WBO never wanted him to defend the belt because they stripped him within like a week of him having that belt, something like a week or 2 weeks. They didn't. It wasn't like he had a mandatory due and didn't meet it. They just immediately took his belt away. Whereas the WBC gave him an opportunity to fight Zivic. HBO didn't want the fight. They weren't going to do an independent pay-per-view, and then they stripped him. And so there's a little bit of a difference there. That and you know, in defense of Lou and them, I have to say, you know, I'm a big fan of Pirog. I enjoy his work. I think he's better than he looked in his last fight because he was injured. But where have they been fighting? They fought one time since that big win. They did it in Russia where nobody could see it except for us on streams. And there's no U.S. fight. He hasn't been on HBO. He hasn't even fought a named guy. Like, Martinez is like, look at all the guys I fought in my last five fights. Your big win is over Danny Jacobs, who is a prospect. Why should I fight you? Because you have my belt? And I kind of understand that. He doesn't bring anything to the table in terms of money, but he brings a lot of risk. So,
yeah.
So why do that fight? And I kind of understand that.
They almost mirror themselves in a lot of ways, too, though. I mean, well, not in record-wise and with the accomplishments that Martinez has done, but, you know, I think that's the argument, too. Some fans might say, you know, and I'm playing a little devil advocate here, though, but some fans are going to say, well, Martinez doesn't even have a following either. So that's why I say they kind of mirror themselves where they both don't bring much to the table in terms of bringing tons and tons of fans. And so it makes sense not to happen right at this moment. I like what Lou DiBella is doing with Barker. In the beginning, you know, of course, you know, a lot of fans are, okay, who's Barker? Where's Darren Barker coming from? But you're absolutely right. When it comes in terms of the UK supporting their fighters, they bring a lot of weight. You can't argue about that. And to make them into an international star, I think that's the road that leads to what needs to be done because guess what? You're not making him a star in where he's locally located at, you know? I mean, that was some of the rants that fight fans were having was he's an Oxnard. Make him a star there. They just weren't getting it. Can't make him a star in Oxnard, California. Barker is a tall guy. He's a lanky guy, just like what you're mentioning right now, Chris. You know, he's an elusive kid. It really boils down to this is a good matchup. I think this is where it gets a little fuzzy here is that, you know, Chavez got a title, okay, this past Saturday. The opponent, Zivic, was a guy that was not okayed in the beginning for a match for Sergio Martinez, but Barker is. And, you know, me and Gabe, we were talking about this the other night. What we were saying was, you know, it seems to me that the way HBO is looking at things is more as a promoter, not as a network, but more as a promoter. They're acting more like a promoter, in my opinion, and I think a lot of fight fans' opinion. They're acting more as a promoter than a network, meaning that they see, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. as more of a money bag. You know, he's much easier to market than a Sergio Martinez, and in business. 101, that just makes more sense. You look at that and you say, well, yeah, because this guy has, you know, he has a legendary father who has tons and tons of adoring fans. So automatically he's going to bring out the masses. Well, Martinez, you got to build them from the ground up. And HBO doesn't want to do that. I mean, look at the fighters they're being picking. They really don't want to mess around with that. They're going off of advice meant from other people rather than going in and acting as themselves. I mean, if they're going to act like a promoter, you might as well act like it full-fledged. Stop half-stepping it. Stop putting your toes, you know, through the door. Might as well stick your whole body through and walk through. To me, that's what HBO is doing. And, you know, Lou DiBella's now just saying, you know what? I'm not going to depend on these guys. We're just going to have to continue going on another road. And hopefully the prime of Martinez the fire doesn't die out. Because he's fighting oppositions that's tough after another. Are they well-known oppositions? No. But are they dangerous? Absolutely.
I think style-wise, I think Pirog is definitely a huge test for Martinez, just style matchup. You know, the way he fights, he's elusive and he hits hard with counter punches and stuff like that. Martinez is very elusive and quick on his feet and hands, so I think that matchup is very good. I just have one question for you guys. The triple header, is there a triple header on the Matisse and Alexander fight on HBO?
No, the triple header, from what I understand, I could be wrong on this, is going to be, is rumored anyways, I don't think it's set in stone yet, is the July 9th show with Paul Williams fighting Erzlandi Lara, and then
I think that was ruled out off, though. I think they're not going to do that. You know what? I would have found out if I would have gotten to that conference call, man. My bad, I didn't do that. They had a conference call about it, and I didn't tune into it.
I think that's a dangerous fight for Paul Williams.
Erzlandi Lara, certainly.
Yeah.
We're probably going to have Ronnie Shields on next week to discuss it, him training Erzlandi Lara. I think he's a guy that has got a lot of potential, Erzlandi Lara. You know, he just hasn't brought it yet.
Right.
I think he's got decent power. I don't know how real it is. And Williams is coming off that loss, and he's fighting a guy that's got a lot of class to him, a lot of amateur skill. He hasn't put it together as a pro. That's his problem. Lara just—he looked terrible in his last fight. Just boring, lackadaisical. There was no fire under him.
That's his temperament, though.
Yeah, that really is. And so I wonder what he's going to do with Paul Williams in his face. And I'm wondering, what's Paul going to be like? Is Paul going to be just the same aggressive guy? Because, I mean, the way George Peterson talks, you know, Sergio Martinez got lucky. It was no failing of their own, that anybody could have landed that shot in that fight. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, with that defense, anybody could land that shot. But that to me is a sign that you haven't accepted why you've lost. And therefore, if you can't do that, then you can't improve.
That sign has been held for some time, though. I mean, even when they won the fight with Sergio Martinez in that first fight, they made a lot of mistakes. And when we had them on, we even told them about the mistakes, but they felt, no, we don't need to change anything. We're going to go in with the same game plan. It was like, really? The same game plan? You guys are going to be going into the fight. Going with this Paul Williams and Lara fight, to me, it's, you know what, Gabe? Chris, I really like the fact that they're gonna go. They picked that opponent, and I'm gonna tell you why. Because you guys hit it right on the head. There was that. Here's a guy. His temperament is very mellow. You know, he didn't look that great in his last fight. He's still trying to find himself, trying to have that transition from amateur to pro. And to me, when you got a guy, a fighter that's been knocked out, as brutal as Paul Williams has been knocked out, the trainer can say whatever he wants. But it all counts when the fighter gets into the ring, because that's the guy that's got to face the demons. That's the guy that's got to have a game plan after he gets punched in the face. So when you get a guy like Cuban fighter like Lotto, who's going to sit there and take his time and you know, still trying to find himself, and you could even say his heads are up in the clouds a little bit when he's fighting, that, to me, regains back confidence to a fighter that just been knocked the F out.
Yeah, and the way that Paul Williams been knocked out, I rarely see any type of fighter after being knocked out the way he's been knocked out, so devastating, like come back and, you know, just have a good career. Like normally the way he was knocked out, I haven't seen that in a while. He was out with his eyes open. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's bad.
Yeah,
so,
man. I mean, that it was nasty. It was a nasty knockout.
Yeah, I just want to see how he takes a punch next time, almost like, you know, you wonder how Roy Jones took the next fight, and we saw what happened to him after he was knocked out that time. In this case, Paul Williams was out cold, like, how cold. So I want to see if he takes a hard flush shot, how his chin's going to react to it.
Yep. I mean, he could react the way Fernando Vargas reacted, you know,
when
he fought Flores right after, you know, Tito Trinidad. You saw the exact face expression and dropped head first, you know what I mean? Hey, Chris, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Don't hang up, all right? We got to patch in some other fight fans that have been waiting.
All right.
Let's patch in Rodrigo, who wants to speak. He wants to talk about Canelo and Chavez Jr. here on Leaving the Ring. You're live, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, fellas. Chavez Jr., Canelo Alvarez. has Mexican boxing gone commercial?
We talked about this last week. You know what, bro? I hate to say it, but good thing, though, we still have a lot of Mexican fighters out there that haven't gone commercial, but those two guys really have jumped shark. You know what I mean? It's, wow, we're sinking. If this is the future of our Mexican fighters, we're sinking really bad. Gabriel?
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Me or him?
Whoever.
Okay, I got one more. With that said, I got another question. Are the history books being somewhat stained and ruined by these paper titles and these especially with Canelo winning as the youngest junior middleweight, taking that record from one of my favorite fighters when I started watching boxing is Fernando Vargas. You know, he beat the legitimate champion. You know, and he got the record, but now, you know, they gave it to Canelo, which is, you know, it was a catch weight, which he did meet against a welterweight for a vacant belt. And same thing with Chavez now. He's the youngest Mexican ever to win, a middleweight title. I mean, is this going to keep going? I mean, it's just kind of staying in the record books, you know, because the record books, we have all these great accomplishments by great fighters, and you have things like this happening. It's just like, I mean, it just upsets me as a pure boxing fan, you know. So what's your take on that?
Well, you know, it's really hard to compare eras. You know, it's not like baseball, even though baseball's got its big asterisk with the steroids era. You know, things kind of get watered down with all the belts that we've had. We've had, you know, if you look back in the history books, guys weren't holding the WBA or WBC belts. You know, the belts had different names. It was the IBC, the IBA. There was other things. And they've kind of evolved over the years. I think at the end of the day, when you look at the resumes of fighters, you should be able to tell who was the best guy, who fought the most guys at the top level, who won the most fights. I think all those things will be real. And, you know, if people look back and say, well, Canelo was the youngest junior middleweight champion, they'll look at who he beat. You know, a lot of times, you know, people bring up, like, Teddy Atlas was on ESPN recently, and he was saying how Manny Pacquiao is not top 20. And he was like, look at the guys like Henry Armstrong. And these guys, they fought real people, and they weren't fighting faded stars like Pacquiao is. But you really look at Henry Armstrong's record, and no question he's an all-time great. But look at who he beat to win those titles. A lot of those guys had like 20 losses. At least two of them did. So are they faded guys? Define faded. Who's more shot-born, a guy with one or two losses? You know, in Cotto's case, it was, like, I think, one loss, and he was a couple fights removed from that loss. Or a guy, and he's only got, like, 40 fights or less, versus a guy with, like, 120 fights and 20 losses. Who's more faded and shot-worn? I mean, it's, you know, again, it's hard to compare eras, because we don't know how Cotto would look after 100 fights, you know. To me, you know, it's hard to say if the history books are kind of watered down. I think the sport in general is watered down. These guys don't fight as often as the old-timers do. You know, look at Floyd. He's taking a great fight now, but when he was at the height of his powers and he was the welterweight champ and there was a ton of guys to fight, he retired. And rather than taking all those guys, and all those guys like Margarito, Cotto, Mosley, Pacquiao, they all ended up fighting each other. We all know how they match up because they fought.
Right.
You know, now Floyd didn't fight any of those guys, but he can say, oh, well, those guys all beating each other up and they lost. I would have taken them anyways. Now he's taking on Victor Ortiz. Now we get to find out how he matches up with a younger, strong guy. But so in history, you know, but other people will point and say, well, he's undefeated. Well, yeah, I could be undefeated too if I avoided certain people. So I think it's up to the individual. Boxing is such a weird sport. It's not like any other sport. You know, you can look at the Lakers and say, look at how, you know, all their wins, losses, championships over this period of time, and it's accurate and it's fair because they played everybody. Whereas in boxing, not everybody fights against the same guys. So, you know, it's all about when.
Though in team sports, though, you can always say, well, yeah, you're right, the Lakers won this year, but the following year, when we got so-and-so, you know, and it made either our offense or defense much better. I think it's really, really difficult to really judge errors because, one, we didn't live in those times. You got to remember, too, that even though there's a lot of different titles, you know, that a lot of these champions that held those titles, they were in a position where a lot of champions are in position now, which means the money, the numbers. They could pick and choose. You know, when you plateau a certain amount of, I mean, a plateau in your career, you can go, okay, look, I'm not going to face this guy because this reason, I'm not going to do this for this reason here, you know. The problem that we see a lot here happening in boxing is that we allow these things to happen, where I think in other sports, the fans themselves, they really get behind in what's going on, you know. I mean, they organize to help out, to do the commissions, where I don't think our sport does that, you know. I mean, I think we have the power to do that, but do we do it? We don't. You know, I mean, one time we had a conversation. Remember that, Gabe? We were sitting across a guy that was an actual promoter, a small-time promoter. We're having breakfast with the guy, and I'm not going to mention his name because he had asked us to keep him out of the loop because he'd get in trouble. But this guy went down to the commission meetings, you know, California State Commission meetings, and he said, look, there's 10, 15 of us that want to change the sport, but then you have 300 that are saying no, man. We got our hands in the bowl here, you know. So I think that's what it boils down to. This is the reason why a lot of the things that we see happen in our sport is because you do have a lot of people that are behind the scenes that really don't care for the sport. I mean, it's been thriving for how many years? I mean, it's one of the oldest sports out there. I think the only other sport you can really say that is probably in age-wise is basketball, but it wasn't the way it was played now. You know,
yeah, it's just hard to love, but I can't put it down. You know what I mean?
That's why I've always said, brother. I think us boxing fans, we're like battered women. You know, when we should get out of the relationship and say no to the relationship, we just don't do it.
it's like that hot girl that has a bunch of drama. That's how I see it. You know, like she's hot, she gets a lot of drama, but those nights when we get it right, she knocks my socks off. You know what I mean? I just can't leave her alone. I
don't like the boxing writer is thinking, maybe I can change her. You know, she'll be different for me. You know? And it just ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen.
No.
But, you know, it's also coming down to little things that, you know, when you look at the, like, records, you know, just to see who was better. And people will argue with me about this, but, like, they'll say, well, you know, Oscar was better. Say, well, I think Trinidad had a better career. And not talking about money, because nobody can compare with Oscar when it comes to money. But look at, you know, they have like 8 common opponents. Only one of them, 8 or 9, and only one of them Oscar fought first, which is Pernell Whitaker. But Tito did a more thorough job. A lot of people thought that Whitaker lost to Oscar. But then you have to look at when they fought. You know, maybe Whitaker was a little more faded when he fought Tito. And fought an aggressive fight because of it, and therefore got beat up more. But then you look at all the other guys. Yuri Boy Campos was undefeated. Obakar was undefeated when Trinidad got him. So was Fernando Vargas. And then Oscar came around years later. You know, Tito already wrecked and knocked Mayorga out for the first time. Then Oscar fought him. So you kind of look at things like that and you kind of have to become almost a historian with this sport if you really want to know who's the best guy, where they place in the history. You've got to understand the history and really dig deep beyond just BoxRec, but really look at the fights themselves and what was surrounding those fights, what was going on. That's the only really way to know that. And when the best fight the best, the belts, you know, they help fighters get dates and they bring more money to the table. If you're looking for clarity, don't look at the belts. Look at who the people are fighting. And I don't think there's anybody that looks at Chavez Jr.'s belt or Canelo's belt and says, yeah, that's the best guy in the division. Maybe fans do, or people that just, you know, just like those guys, or people that are ignorant of our sport, you know, like the Jim Rohns of the world, but who's trashing Mayweather-Ortiz, which is a pretty good fight. But, you know, I think it's clear that we know the best 160-pound champion in the world is Sergio Martinez. That's just no question. He's kind of a head and shoulders above everybody else in the division right now. At 154, it's a little more wide open. And while I didn't like that catch fight with Canelo, for Hatton to give him a belt and take that away from Fernando Vargas, who fought tough people to be called the youngest junior middleweight in the world, or junior middleweight champion in history, it was a vacant belt, and a lot of people fight for vacant belts. How he got that ranking, I have no idea, because he was apparently a welterweight, and suddenly he was number one in the WBC. But, you know, Angulo's gone. You know, Vonis is right there. But there's no real clear person at 154 that you can point to and say, that's the best guy in the division. Nobody has that signature win or that signature resume right now. It's kind of a young division. At 160, yeah, it's just an absolute travesty that that Junior was rated as high as he was and has a belt. But it's boxing. So, you know,
yeah,
travesty is in the eye of the beholder.
I'm kind of pumped about tomorrow. Speaking of young guys at 154, I got my ringside seat to the Guerrero and Mayfield card. What's y'all's take on that? Can y'all have time for that? I know y'all know Mayfield from the West Coast.
Yeah, Kareem Mayfield.
Yeah.
Is he still stepping in with Steve Forbes?
As far as I know.
I thought that got changed, Gabe.
I'm pretty sure he's still fighting Stevie Forbes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I think it was Sean Porter that was originally slotted, and they changed him. He stepped in for Sean Porter, which I hope it didn't change again, but, I mean, I'm checking that out tomorrow. I really haven't seen much of the kid.
Let me check my text here, because I was talking to Kareem's publicist. Oh, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. Okay. You know what? I like Kareem a lot. I know him. Got a good right hand. Fighting Stevie Forbes, for some folks, he's going to say, well, it doesn't do a whole lot because Forbes hasn't been in the scene for, I don't know, how long? I can't even think of the years right now, the last time he's been in the ring, you know? But I say it is a good fight for Kareem, just because the fact that Kareem, too, is another guy that hasn't been as active, you know? He's a guy that's been used more or less as a sparring partner for a lot of other guys, and he's got some of that sparring partner syndrome, you know? He hasn't really shooken it off and stuff. And I take that back. Steve Forbes has been in the ring this year, but only one time, and it was in February, I believe. And he did lose that fight. So Kareem could do a whole lot, which is to get back into the ring, shake off some of that ring rust, because he hasn't fought since 2010, and that was in San Francisco. And it was a good turnout, I know that, because a lot of people did go out there to support Kareem, because he's got a good following. But, you know, Forbes is a small guy. Kareem's a big kid. You know, he's a big 154-pounder. I'm not sure whether or not they're going back down, if he's going to 147, because I think that's what I was told that he was trying to do, was go back to 147. But if not at 154, even if 147, he's still a really big, large kid. I see him doing – I'm going to tell you right now, and I think his people are going to get upset, and I think, Gabe, you agree with me, it's going to be a boring fight. Kareem gets really stuck on being a sparring partner and really settles down and just throwing one punch. Forbes could, if Forbes has any life still left in him, he could gear up for an upset, but I don't think he will, because that's not the purpose of them putting Forbes in with Mayfield, in my opinion.
Well, I'm hoping he kind of comes out of the shell a little bit, seeing that he's been out of the scene for a while, and now he's on ESPN too. You know, so this is kind of like the platform where people jump off from ESPN to HBO, Showtime. Or whatever. So I'm hoping it's good. I mean, I hope it's a good turnout, because they're having it at the Frank Irwin Center, which is a huge venue. And I know Guerrero's big back home, but I don't think he's going to draw well to Austin. But I'm hoping, you know. So I was just curious about Mayfield. I've read about him, but I haven't really seen him.
It's good. I mean, hey, he's got power. Yeah, go ahead, brother.
I've got to call in Marco Antonio Rubio, who's scheduled to be on right now.
Okay.
His manager just contacted me. Let me I'm going to disappear for a second, and I will come right back with him.
Go ahead. Yeah, you know, brother, like I said, you know, he's a big, strong, durable kid, but I wouldn't expect a whole lot. Just the fact that he's been inactive, and also because of the fact that he does get stuck in just throwing one punch at a time.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping he comes out.
Me too, man. I've been waiting for him to come out of that shell for a very long time. I've even told him face to face, man. Hey, hey, Rob, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right, fellas. Take it easy.
Take it easy, brother. For the rest of the callers, man, stay on hold. Don't hang up. We're going to patch you in on Leaving in the Ring. I know I see a couple of callers. They've been on hold waiting patiently, and we appreciate it, man. I really enjoy when we do have listeners call in and chop it up here on Leaving the Ring with us about boxing. I see a couple callers want to talk about Floyd Mayweather versus Victor Ortiz. Still guys want to talk about Sergio Martinez. Other guys want to talk about Canelo and Rhodes, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hey, you can call in at 347-215-7598. You go ahead and do that. It's not a problem. Hey, Genaro Hernandez, man, speaking about a fallen warrior who had just passed away recently, and we sent out our condolences out to his family. Floyd Mayweather Jr. has always been marked as the bad guy, you know, the bad man out of boxing. He's the bad boy of boxing. But you know what? If knowing Floyd, man, he's got a softer side. He has shown it not just once but numerous times. He's funded charities. He's done things for the greater good of the sport. And he did it for the greater of the sport when he funded General Hernandez's funeral. He was the guy that contributed. He paid it off and made sure that he was, General Hernandez was properly buried. So that was a great, great deed. I know some fight fans sometimes can take the game a little personal and not like a particular fighter because of whatever reasons. And they tend to forget, man, this is the fight game. This is what makes them – this is what how they get paid, you know, get their bills paid and stuff, you know. So sometimes you got to meet the person to get a judgment off that person and stuff. What did you see on television? It's not necessarily everything you see outside. So while we're waiting for Gabe. Gabe, you back online yet, brother? Okay, he's not back online. Let's patch in some other callers really quick while we're waiting for Gabriel Montoya. And if I cut you off, caller, it's because we got him back on, okay? But let's see if we can squeeze you in real quick. Let's see, Carcinio, what's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, what's up, brother? Man, I'm just calling in because I want to talk about this Rose fight with Canelo, man. I'm just, that's like a 50-50 fight for me.
You know, I like it. Go ahead.
We're back.
Yeah, really, I was just like, Rose, I felt like he got more experience than Canelo. She's more.
Carcinio. Don't hang up, brother. I'm going to put you on hold because we got our guests on right now. But don't hang up because I want to talk to you about this. Okay? Go ahead, Gabriel.
Right now I have with me a man that figures big time into the middleweight title division. He's the number one contender to the WBC belt held by Julio Cesar Chavez. I'm here with his manager, Julio Godino. And I'd like to introduce, on his birthday no less, Marco Antonio Rubio. Welcome to the show, Marco.
Thank you, gentlemen. This is Julio. Marco's on the line with us.
Dave, why don't you start the interview? This is my co-host, Dave Duenas. I'm Gabriel Montoya. Dave, take it away.
How you doing, guys? Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us. Happy birthday, Marcos. Gracias mucho para tener el tiempo para hablar con nosotros aquí and Leaving in the Ring. That's about as good as my Spanish gets, brothers, okay? So don't expect any more than that.
Gracias.
Porque aquí en Leaving in the Ring, primo, somos pochos. So somos mexicanos, pero no hablan, nosotros no hablan muy bien en español. Okay, so here's my first question. Fantastic win you had. Okay, in Canada, you had a guy, though, that had a big punch, and you guys knew this. Was the game plan, though, was to allow the younger fighter to spend all the energy that he was bringing in the first couple of rounds?
Sí, bueno, Julio.
Sí, Marco.
Sí.
Felicidades en tu última victoria en Canadá contra David Lemieux, pero la pregunta es, pues obviamente se sabía que era un boxeador con una pegada fuerte. ¿Tu plan era dejarlo entrar y gastar su energía y dejarlo los primeros rounds de golpearte como pasó en la pelea?
Ajá, pues así fue, y pues bueno, el plan era que se vaciara y pues atacarlo después del quinto round.
Yeah, that was, David, that was my plan, was, you know, to let him basically wear himself out in the early rounds. We knew he was a big puncher, and he was going to come in, you know, full force. So my plan was just to let him kind of release what he could and kind of get tired out. And after the fifth round, it was going to be my time.
Let's get down to what I just got one quick question, Gabriel.
Yeah.
Real quick. Let's get down to what a lot of fight fans want to know here, Rubio, because you've been on in tough fights. You know, you're a veteran of the sport. You're a guy that should be getting an opportunity at a title. When you see a kid like Chavez who gets the title shot, do you think that? Because a lot of listeners and callers right now that are Mexican or Mexican American are saying that he's a commercial vehicle. He's not a real Mexican fighter. What are your thoughts about that?
Oye, Marco, pues sabemos que has tenido muchas peleas fuertes, duras. Eres un veterano en el deporte y pues estamos a punto de tener tu oportunidad para el título. Y ahorita hay muchos fanáticos, muchos mexicanos, mexicano-americanos que pues ven a Julio César Chávez, que tiene el título, que de veras no, pues, no ha peleado con nadie y pues sientan que es un boxeador comercial más que boxeador. ¿Tú qué piensas de eso?
Sí, pues yo también creo que fabricaron un campeón que en realidad, pues bueno, como dijo el mismo Bob Arum en una entrevista reciente, todavía no está listo para pelear con Cotto, todavía no está listo para pelear con los grandes. Entonces, ¿qué tipo de campeón mundial es si no está listo para pelear con los grandes, no?
You know, yeah, I would have to agree with you a bit. Unfortunately, he's what I guess you would call a factory-made champion, fabricated in boxing. And, you know, like Bob Arum said recently that, you know, he's not ready to fight Cotto. And I guess my question is, if you're a champion and you're not ready to fight the best, then what kind of champion are you?
Exactly. I completely agree. I'm curious, though, in terms of, as a fighter, you know, the way you handled Lemieux was to, you knew he'd be aggressive early, and so you wanted him to tire himself out, and then you would take him late. With Chavez Jr., without giving away your game plan, he seems to start slow and then kind of pick up in the later rounds. You know, he starts to throw body shots and come on strong late. How do you approach a fighter like that, that's young, inexperienced, not that skilled, but it seems to get stronger as the fight goes on? Do you have to lay your groundwork early, or do you take him into deep water?
Marco, pues el plan te funcionó contra David Lemieux, alguien que empieza muy rápido y luego pues se cansan a lo tarde en la pelea. Pero pues al contrario, como Chavez Jr. es uno joven, empieza un poco lento y luego parece que se empieza a caminar más rápido durante la pelea en los últimos rounds. Entonces, ¿cómo piensas tú que tendrías que pelear contra Chavez Jr.? ¿Que tendrías que empezar más rápido contra él y hacer tu trabajo pronto o igual esperarte hasta los finales rounds?
Bueno, yo creo que Julio es un peleador que recibe mucho castigo y bueno, yo me considero que tengo una pegada pues bastante dura y yo creo que la pelea con Julio sería desde el primer round salir a pegarle. O sea, es un peleador que aguanta, pero bueno, sabemos que con la pegada que tenemos le vamos a hacer daño y va a ir mermando mediante los rounds. Y pues bueno, él es un peleador, no es que empiece lento y acabe rápido. Pues él, yo creo que tiene el mismo ritmo toda la pelea, es semilenta el ritmo. Y bueno, yo creo que con él sería pues tirar más golpes y pues salir desde el primer round a tratar de bloquearlo, porque él recibe bastante golpe.
I think, you know, when I get to play with Chavez, you know, he's a young fighter that receives a lot of hits, a lot of punches, a lot of damage. And I think one of my fortes is my punch. I've got a very strong punch that I think I can do a lot of damage to Chavez. And I would be coming out, you know, earlier in the fight, knowing what his style is throughout his fights. And my goal would just be come in and let him feel my power. He can take some punches, but I think it's still rounds. He's not going to be able to take him much longer, and I'm looking for a knockout in the middle rounds.
When you have such a successful win over Lemieux, I mean, this is a big fight for you guys, just because the fact that Lemieux was looked at as like a second coming of a natural. stop that gravy train. And now it looks like you guys are like at a halt, that you have to have an open letter and you openly say, look, give me a fight, give me Chavez. It's a little bit disappointing that you have to sit in the sidelines and not be one of the guys that are being called out. You literally are practically asking for a fight.
Pues, Marcos, pues, tu última pelea con David Lemieux era alguien que, pues, lo tenían como el boxeador nuevo, el que tiene un golpe natural como Tito Trinidad, y, pues, tú le ganaste. Fue algo que sorprendió a toda la gente en el boxeo y te mereces tu oportunidad y te ganaste esa pelea y la eliminatoria. ¿Cómo te sientes ahora teniendo y siendo el rival mandatorio, el número uno, que tienes que esperar? Estás aquí sentado esperando la oportunidad contra Chavez y pues hasta hemos mandado cartas, lo hemos retado en la prensa y pues ¿cómo se siente tener que estar esperando la oportunidad contra él?
Bueno, pues no hay más que seguir trabajando, pero bueno, sí se siente un poco desilusionante de parte del Consejo Mundial de Boxeo que no cumpla con lo dicho, que pues es una eliminatoria. Se supone que una eliminatoria es para sacar el retador oficial y no tienen que andar buscando otros retadores que no hicieron nada para merecer esa oportunidad, y pues le están dando la oportunidad a peleadores que muchas veces ni clasificados mundiales son, y pues yo creo que no es algo lógico. Pero bueno, pues no hay que más que seguir trabajando y esperar la oportunidad, porque pues nosotros queremos pelear con Chávez.
You know, it is a bit disappointing, you know, right now I'm just continuing to train, continuing to work. You know, at this point, looking for other opportunities, but waiting for my main opportunity in goal of fighting Chavez. You know, it's a little frustrating that you go out, you risk your career, you risk a fight for an eliminator, you win, and then, you know, you're thinking an eliminator is going to be your opportunity for the title shot. And you're now the number one contender, yet they're looking for other opponents that aren't even ranked. So it kind of is frustrating as to understand what the meaning of an eliminator is if you're going to have to sit around and wait until they're good and ready to fight you.
It does seem like, you know, the boxing politics is just at play here, and they seem to change the rules depending on what they, you know, what they're feeling that day or who has the belt. But in the meantime, I saw that you took a fight back on the 4th. Are you guys just going to keep busy like that, or do you feel like you've only got so many miles left in you that you can't keep doing that? Or are you just going to continue to fight and wait for your shot? What is going to be your approach?
Pues Marco, pues sí, vemos que hay una poca de política en el boxeo, obviamente, dependiendo quién tiene la fuerza y el poder. Pero pues vimos que peleaste el 4 de junio. ¿Cuál es tu plan? ¿Vas a seguir peleando o vas a esperar la pelea o piensas que tienes suficiente tiempo y energía para seguir peleando en este ritmo? ¿Qué es el plan y qué es lo que quieres hacer?
Bueno, pues yo quisiera pelear el campeonato lo más pronto posible, pero bueno, no podemos estar esperándolo y muchas veces la inactividad es mala para todo boxeador. Y pues hay que seguir trabajando siempre con el riesgo de tener una derrota antes del campeonato mundial. Pero bueno, pues por eso nos tenemos que estar preparando como si siempre lo estuviéramos peleando. Pero bueno, pues vamos a seguir insistiendo que nos den esa oportunidad porque pues nos la ganamos arriba del ring.
You know, my ultimate goal and what I want right now is to fight for the world title. I earned it, I fought for it, and that's what I want. But until that opportunity comes, I need to stay busy. It's not a good thing to be inactive in the boxing arena. It's not good for any boxer. It's not good for the body. It's not good for the training. So my goal, I'm going to keep busy. I'm going to keep training as if every fight that I have is a world title fight until I get my opportunity. But I've got to stay busy, and I'm not just going to sit around waiting for the opportunity. And unfortunately, I have to risk a potential loss by staying active, but I'm gonna stay active. I'm gonna keep winning, and I will eventually get my world title opportunity.
When do you stop being respectful? I'm sorry, just real quick question. When do you guys stop being – when do you think is the limit of staying respectful and stop being respectful to Chavez for not giving you – or if he doesn't give you the opportunity?
Marco, ¿a qué punto o cuándo llega el momento donde paras de ser respetuoso en tu manera de retar, en tu manera de pedirle la pelea? ¿Cuándo es el momento adecuado donde se acaba el respeto y salen los golpes?
Yo creo que el momento que ellos nos faltan el respeto al no darnos nuestro lugar como retador oficial, yo creo que es cuando se sale uno de sus casillas y empieza uno a hablar muchas veces un poco de más, pero por lo mismo, por la desesperación de que pues a uno le obligan a hacer una eliminatoria, la gana, va uno a la casa del favorito, lo tiene que noquear en su casa, y ellos que ni siquiera una eliminatoria hicieron, y les dan la oportunidad con alguien que ni siquiera campeón era, lo subieron a campeón, para sacaron a Martínez para que él pudiera tener la oportunidad de ser campeón mundial. Yo creo que ahí es donde las cosas cambian, ¿no? Cuando a lo mejor uno se aguanta por las reglas del CMB, que salen nuevas reglas, que tiene una defensa o dos defensas opcionales, pues ya pasando de eso, yo creo que las cosas van a cambiar.
I think, you know, up to a point, you know, that where we continue to be respectful, and when that will change will be the second that we're disrespected in our opportunity to fight for the title. Unfortunately, you know, the rules as the WBC has placed him is that he's got one, possibly two optional defenses that he can make within a 12-month period. He'll have to fight us within a 12-month period, and maybe the second that they disrespect that opportunity in turn, you know, that's when things will have to change as far as our respect in the manner that we're going to fight. You know, we deserve it. I went to Canada, to an undefeated boxer's hometown. I was the underdog. I was given an eliminator. I had to fight this opportunity, which Chavez did not have to fight an eliminator to get an opportunity for the title. He fought a champion that was given the title and moved Maravilla, Martinez, out of the title spot so that they can have this fight. So it's frustrating. And I'm going to respect the regulation that they put on my opportunity for a fight. Whether I agree with it or not, there's not much I can do, but I will continue to be respectful up until the point that I am negated my opportunity for the title fight, and then things will change.
I'm curious, you know, because it's obvious that Marco, that you believe that, like everybody else, that Martinez is the real champion. And I know you probably paid a sanctioning fee in order to do your eliminator fight to the WBC. What would be more prestigious to you? Say you can't get Chavez Jr. Would you be willing to fight Martinez for the real title?
Marco, basado en lo que acabas de decir, pues yo creo que tú piensas igual que el mundo, que Martinez es el verdadero campeón. Pagaste una sanción para pelear la eliminatoria. Pero ¿qué sería y qué tendrá más prestigio para ti? ¿Pelear contra Chavez o pelear contra Martínez?
Pues yo creo que tendría más prestigio pelear contra Martínez, porque pues pelear contra el verdadero campeón sería mucho mejor y sería una pelea mucho más atractiva. Pero bueno, muchas veces por la ignorancia o lo que uno persigue es el campeonato mundial, y pues ahorita el campeón mundial es Chávez, y pues uno lo que quiere es llegar a ser campeón mundial muchas veces, porque muchas veces estar peleando con los más duros del mundo sin ir por el campeonato mundial, pues no es lo mismo. Pero bueno, claro que tiene más prestigio pelear con Martínez que con Chávez, mil veces más prestigio.
I think the prestige between the two, it's 1,000 times more prestigious to fight against Sergio Martinez. It's obvious, we know that. However, maybe just the ignorance of us as boxers sometimes, that we strive so much to win the world title and have that belt. You know, as young boxers, we grow up dreaming of being a world champion. And unfortunately, right now, Chavez Jr. is the man that is the world champion that I have to beat to be able to say that I'm world champion. But if you're talking just prestige, Sergio Martinez 1,000% more prestige than Chavez Jr.
So let me ask you this then. Let me ask you this then. So prestige is shouldn't that weigh more than fighting a kid that brings dollar signs, in your guys' opinion, or no?
Marco, y el prestigio, ¿no crees tú que vale más pues el prestigio del boxeo y de la pelea, al contrario de pelear con Chávez, que solo va a traer dinero? ¿Que no crees que es más importante el prestigio?
Sí, claro, como repito, pelear con Martínez sería pues lo mejor para todos, para todo boxeador, pelear con un verdadero campeón. Y pues ir con toda la ilusión de ganarle, pues más que pelear con él, ir con las ganas de ganarle, para mí sería algo mejor que pelear con Chávez. Pero pues repito, pues muchos los boxeadores buscamos el campeonato mundial, sea quien sea el campeón. Pero pues sí, o sea, repito, Martínez es mucho más prestigio que Chávez.
Absolutely. I mean, my goal is to one day I will be fighting Martinez. And yes, the prestige is always there. Unfortunately, me as a boxer, and I think most boxers, is the desire to be a world champion. And the guy that holds that belt is Chavez. If it was Martinez, I'd be going after Martinez right now to go for that title. And I always will fight and want to fight the world champion. The real champion, absolutely, is Martinez. We all know that. But right now, the man that holds the world champion title that I want is Chavez. And that's who I need to go after now. And I will be in the ring with Martinez one day.
I'm curious how you, Marco, as a Mexican fighter, you know, you're from Mexico. How do Mexicans look at Chavez Jr.? It seems to me the most Mexicans I talk to really like Canelo. But they kind of look at Chavez Jr. as a rich kid who wouldn't be there without his dad's name. Is that accurate? Is that how most Mexican fight fans feel? The people that you talk to?
Tú, Marco, siendo mexicano y de México y boxeador, tú, pues, ¿qué es lo que piensan los fanáticos de boxeo y los mexicanos de Chávez? Yo miro que muchos respetan más a Canelo, y piensan que Chávez nomás es hijo de papi, y pues hijo de dinero. Pero tú, en tu gente, en tu local ahí, ¿cómo ves lo que sienten ellos de Chávez?
Bueno, pues yo creo que todos pensamos igual. Yo creo que a nadie nos pueden engañar. Y bueno, Canelo es lo mismo. Canelo es lo mismo que Chávez. O sea, Canelo peleó por el campeonato mundial contra un desconocido y va a defender contra otro desconocido. Y los número uno, dos del mundo, ahí están esperando. El retador oficial del Canelo es el Perro Angulo. Con él estuve platicando y también me dijo que estaba en la misma situación que yo con Canelo, pero pues a ellos les van a estar dando pues peleas fáciles, y nosotros que somos retadores oficiales, los obligatorios, pues nos van a tener ahí. La gente sabe lo que ellos son en realidad. No son boxeadores malos, pero tampoco están demostrando ser lo mejor del mundo.
Well, you know, I think everybody has the same feeling. You know, those that know boxing and those that watch. I mean, actually, Canelo is just like Chavez. You know, they both fought for a title against champions that were unknown. They're both defending against non-rated or unknown boxers. And in Canelo's situation, you have Angulo, who's the rightful guy that should be fighting him for the title. And you know, I've spoken to him, and you know, he's in the same position I am. We're watching two guys that are you know, handmade champions. They're not boxing ring made champions, and you know, the rightful rivals and the rightful rated guys that should be fighting are sitting on the sideline waiting for it. So you know, I think they're both the same.
I have a follow-up from when I asked you that question about Sergio Martinez and the prestige here. Because, you know, listeners, we have a lot of listeners. They're going to be tuning in live right now, and then they're going to archive the show here, Marco. But my follow-up question is that because some listeners are going to say, okay, you're calling out Chavez, you know, who, but as you said it yourself, that you recognize Martinez being the man and the real champion at that weight. So some fans may look at it, well, you're going for the easier road by facing Chavez? Why avoid facing the real champion regardless? What's your thoughts,
Marco,
about
pues una pregunta siguiente a la tema anterior de Sergio Martínez, pues tenemos muchos fanáticos, estamos en el radio en vivo, lo van a estar escuchando y pues van a preguntar y van a decir, oye, pues tú mismo eres el tercero campeón de Sergio Martínez y el prestigio queda con él. Entonces, ¿por qué tú te quieres ir con Chávez? ¿Es porque es una ruta más fácil? Pero ¿y por qué? Si de veras en tu mente y en el mundo boxeo, Martínez es el campeón, ¿por qué sigues entonces irte por la vía fácil con Chávez?
Bueno, la vía de Chávez pues es el campeonato mundial, obvio, pero bueno, nosotros queremos pelear con Martínez también, o sea, también se ha hablado de pelear con él, simplemente pues Martínez, él trae su agenda de peleas, y nosotros también ya hablamos de pelear con él, Martínez también ya lo comentó alguna vez, y pues es cosa que se concrete, y nosotros estamos dispuestos también a pelear con Martínez, porque pues nosotros queremos llegar a lo máximo, ¿no? Y pues nosotros estamos con Chávez porque, bueno, somos los mandatorios, los obligatorios, y por eso estamos insistentes con Chávez. Pero si a nosotros se nos da la oportunidad de pelear con el verdadero campeón, que es Martínez, estamos dispuestos a pelear con él porque sería mejor, más prestigio, más credibilidad, y pues yo creo que vendrían mejores cosas, ¿no?, peleando con un verdadero campeón. Pero bueno, repito, o sea, el campeón es Chávez y nosotros somos el número uno. Pero si Martínez nos da la oportunidad, estamos dispuestos.
We all know that obviously the easier route is Chavez, and I repeat, unfortunately, he is the world champion today. And
yeah.
I am the mandatory that I worked, I fought, and I risked everything to be that and have that mandatory opportunity. However, I do want to fight Sergio Martinez. I've never denied wanting to fight Sergio Martinez, and I will fight Martinez if I have that opportunity. There's been conversations in the past. There's been offers. There's never been able anything put in stone, and nothing's come to fruition. But, you know, if Martinez offers us that opportunity, I want to fight Martinez, and I will fight Martinez, and I will go looking to win Martinez and beat the true champion. But
yeah.
I repeat, unfortunately, right now, and it is unfortunate that right now, Chavez Jr. has the world title belt. I'm the mandatory, and that's why I'm calling him out. Martinez has his own agenda. He's got fights in place already. But if the opportunity arises, I will fight Martinez.
Fair enough. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you guys for coming on the radio. It was really a pleasure finally getting to talk to you after all this time. And congratulations on your recent wins. They were exciting, and I applaud you for staying active instead of getting your title shot and then just sitting on it. That's your what doing what fighters do, and that's fight.
Absolutely. Yep, exactly.
Thank you very much for coming on, guys.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Gracias.
Gracias, Marcos.
Happy birthday.
Gracias, gracias.
Yeah.
Enjoy, man. Take care. Thank you.
Gracias.
There you go. Marco Antonio Rubio here on Leaving in the Ring, on his birthday even. Talking to us about his thoughts and his feelings about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and Saul Canelo Alvarez, who he has called them factory champions. He says they are handheld champions. And he did say, hey, look, I do want Martinez, but he's fought, you know, the mandatory, the elimination bout to get at the title belt, which is being held by Chavez, and that is the purpose of why he's doing it, okay? Fighting Sergio Martinez, just to clarify it, him fighting Sergio Martinez, he doesn't receive a belt. He just receives being named as you are the man that beat the man. I know some fight fans are not going to understand that, but it all rolls down to politics, you know? And you know, like, look, he said, we've made offers, etc. Sergio Martinez has their own agenda. Real quick, shout out to one of our favorite publicists, Carlos Gomez, who house out Samson and Sergio Martinez. But, you know, Martinez has his own agenda. So I think their feelings and their thoughts, and I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this, but if they get Chavez, which would be the easier opposition or the easier match to be made. They have the bout, and then they have leverage of going after who they want or accepting who they want to get next, or makes it intriguing for Martinez to want to, because they know Martinez is just one of those guys that just goes, yeah, man, I'll fight him, no biggie, no problem. Well, you know, we've seen that happen numerous times, but I don't know. We've got to see what my co-host thinks. What do you think, here, Gable, what he would say?
I think it's pretty clear what he's saying, and you know, the bottom line is that the belt, you know, when it comes to prestige, I mean, ask HBO what they think of prestige and what they thought of Martinez being the real champion.
They've shown it.
They put him in the last row. So, you know, to me, it makes sense, you know, because it's also, you know, it's a money fight, Chavez Jr., and he also brings the belt. He brings something on two fronts. Martinez, he brings the prestige of, okay, now I'm the middleweight champion. But that doesn't give him any leverage, and the belt gives him the leverage. And so I think that's got kind of everything for him. And just real quick, I just got texted by Ann Wolf, and she's going to be calling into the show here in about 5 minutes or so, just to give you a quick heads up, to talk about James Kirkland, who she's now training again, and who fights next week, I believe, in Texas. But, yeah, you know, getting back to Rubio, I think he's right on point, you know. And however we want to look at it and say, well, you know, he should fight the real champion, that's what, that's what fight fans want. But from his point of view, he's always probably, you know, being a Mexican champion or a Mexican fighter, he's probably always wanted that WBC belt, the belt that represents not only a world champion but his country. So I think it does mean something to him. And if it didn't, he wouldn't pay for that sanctioning fee. So I'm not going to hold that against him. He's earned his right. He's paid his money for his shot. He should get his shot. I hope he gets it, you know. And not only that, but it's a really good fight. I think Rubio
versus Chavez
Jr. is an excellent fight.
It is an excellent fight. I mean, it's a really good fight. You got a very strong veteran, durable guy, can take a punch, guy can give a punch. And then you got a guy in Chavez Jr. who, you know, I mean, his beard, I think it's decent. You know what I mean? We don't know how decent it is to compare to a big puncher like Rubio, but he's a game kid. I mean, like him or not, you still got to say, okay, he likes to, he'll sit there and bang. He gets hit a lot. I think that's why it really kind of spells out of being a good scrap between these two Mexican fighters here. But I would weigh with, I would have to, my bet would have to go with Rubio in this one here. And I think that's why Top Rank and Chavez Jr. are maybe shying away from it. I mean, you know, we don't know the whole story on their end, if whether or not they want this fight. We'd love to get Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. on, or anybody on his stable, to call and leave in the ring and tell us what is going on and what are their thoughts and what is the agenda, and when it comes to building or maneuvering their fighter here. But if you're listening to the fight fans are saying, hey, thumbs up, let's make this fight happen. You know, this guy's doing all the right moves. He fought for the elimination. He beat Lemieux. He's keeping busy. And at the same time, he's doing an open letter, and he's calling in radio shows, and he's saying, yo, I'm game. Let's make this go. Let's make it happen. Give it to Mexico. Let Mexico pick it up. Trust me, it's going to sell out. Put it here in California. It's going to sell out. It's a good fight. Staples definitely will sell out. It's a good fight. I want to see. I want to see if what Rubio is saying about Chavez or factory made, man, that's a pretty good quote
that's
there.
Just straight up. I just kind of like this idea. If you're a champion, and but you got to worry about who you're fighting, what's the problem? What kind of champion are you? You know, and you know, I got to agree with that. You know, like, what kind of, who are you? You know, you're a champion, but wait a minute, I can't fight that guy over there. I got to fight this guy. Well, I'm not ready yet. Well, then why are you wearing the belt? You know, if you're green, don't wear the green belt.
I think that's why we were all pissed off after that Saturday here on Leaving the Ring. A lot of us were calling in, talking about this fight. I mean, about that, because the fact is, you're absolutely right. It's like one of the worst things to hear. You know what I mean? You just don't want to hear something like that. That's why Victor Ortiz was crucified when he said, look, I'm young. I don't deserve this. I shouldn't be getting hit. Then you hear a guy by Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. going, well, no, I'm not ready for him. I don't want to fight him. What, are you crazy? What are you, crazy?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty funny, too, that moment. I was watching the replay of Zibic and Martinez, or Zibic and Chavez Jr. And when they ask him about Martinez, his eyes get, like, huge. Like, why are you bringing him up, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And Chavez Sr.'s mouth, like, drops open. And it's like, you know, come on, man, don't ask us about this guy. We have no intention of fighting him. And, you know, there is that idea that, you know, he isn't ready for Martinez. It would be a slaughter, you know? And so it kind of is, on one hand, the belts mean something because they get you dates and they get you money and all those things. I mean, it's just flat out. If you got a belt, there are rules that make it so that you make a little more money. But, or at least, you know, a percentage of whatever the purse is, or whatever the site fee is. You have to get a certain amount more than the other guy. I get that. But at the same time, like, why move him to a belt and call him a champion when he clearly isn't? A champion is somebody that can fight anybody in the division and will win, you know, or be favored to, or certainly, you know, be 50-50 at the least. You know, a guy like these guys, it's like, I was actually, oh, and here's Ann Wolfe. Hang on 1 second, and I will bring her in.
Go right ahead. All right, boxing heads, you guys want to call in at 347-215-7598. We do got a few guys still on hold that want to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring, but Gabriel Montoya has just clicked over so we can bring on our next guest, Ann Wolfe, who's going to be talking to us a little bit about her fighter with James Curtin.
And Dave, this is a woman that needs no introduction, certainly is one of the greatest female fighters of all time, multi-division champion, I believe simultaneously, is also the trainer of one James Kirkland, who she's recently rejoined as part of his team as his trainer. Welcome to the Leave It in the Ring, Ann Wolfe. Ann, thank you for joining us. It's myself and Dave Duenas, my co-host.
Oh, thank you.
How you doing, Ann?
So,
I'm doing good.
Hey, Ann, before we even conduct the interview really quick, I think, you know, I want to say something to you. I've met you in San Jose, California, but on behalf of all the boxing fans out there, the boxing heads, we want to thank you for reuniting with James Curtin.
Oh, yeah.
We want to let you know, too, that right off the bat, I know fans are going to want to know this answer. We're not going to ask this question. We're not going to ask about why you guys didn't join up after he left prison for those three fights. That's none of our business. That's between you and James, and we're just going to leave it there. But I will like to ask you right off the bat, how did you guys reunite? How did that happen? And what's it been like since you guys have been back together?
Well, Mike called me and he said that James wants to talk to me, so I gave my number and he just started talking, and I was like, you know, they asked, well, did he want, a lot of people asked me, did I want to go back to him, and I never left him. But what a lot of people don't know is all the kids in our gym is like inner city kids. So we have about 15, 20 kids, and they go to prison, they come back, they go to wherever, they come back. They always, the gym is always open, so James knew he could always come back. Whatever problems he was having, he needed to go deal with. His problems that he needed to deal with, and the gym was always open because the gym is just not like James trains here. We've been together for years and years and years, and it's not just like a boxing relationship. It's like we in our gym, everybody's closer than that.
What are your thoughts?
When he came back, it's like it's almost like he never left. It just fell right back into place like he never left. Andrea Kramer asked me, because we're going to be on Real Sports QV, she asked me, she said, did he say he was sorry? I said, no. She said, should he have said he was sorry? I said, no. Because why you have to go through all that, just coming back, and if it falls back in a place like it was, he had enough respect to know that come back when you're ready. And I had enough respect for him to say, when you're ready, then you come back, and everything is going to go right back to the way it was.
Now, did you see his other three fights when he came back? And if you did, what was your assessment? What did you see? Was he different? Did he lose something in prison? Did they rush him back?
No. When people said, did James lose something in prison, you could tell they didn't do their homework on James Kirkland. That means they don't know him really well, because James went to jail before, way before that. And he stayed out of boxing for 3 years. And he came back even hotter than when he left. So this was less than 3 years. So it wasn't about what he lost in prison. It's about that you have to be in condition, you have to be ready, you have to train, and in order to be a killer, you have to train to kill. You can't box. A lot of people think boxing is playing. Somebody's trying to hit you in the head, in the face. They want to win like you want to win. They want to go home and say they won just like you want to go home and say you won. So what are you going to do that's going to go above and beyond what they're doing in order to make you become better than them? They want to do the, they trying to do the same thing you're doing. So when I seen him, I just knew that I'm not saying he lost nothing in prison, because now that he's back, he didn't. I'm not saying that the guy didn't train him or coach him, because I wasn't there. I'm just saying that when you come to my gym, until you throw up, until you act like you're passing out, and until you take a whole bunch of ass whooping enough to make you realize that this is for real, I don't, you know, then I know you're ready.
How shocked were you to see him lose to Ishida? Sorry, Dave.
Go ahead.
I mean, I would have been shocked to see him lose to anybody. Ishida, everybody want to say, well, Ishida didn't have this or Ishida didn't have. Ishida was a man like James Kirkland is a man. Ishida wanted to win like James Kirkland wanted to win. Ishida beat James Kirkland, point blank. By whatever means he beat him by, he still beat him.
Yeah,
he won. He won, point blank. What can you take from him? He won. He got to go home and say, I won. Why should I give an excuse why Ishida didn't win? He's a man like you are. You don't train for the, if you got a 99% chance of winning, I don't train for that 99% chance. I train for that 1%. Because people ask me, well, why you train for 1%? My mother died when she was 44, and I think it was probably a 1% chance that a 44-year-old woman would die and leave 6 babies behind. So I always train for what that 1% is. And I don't think that's what James did. He didn't get ready for that 1%. He just took up on that 99% and was like, I'm good with the 99%. So now that he came back to the gym, you need to train for the 1%. The hell with the 99% that you're going to win.
Right.
When you got James back, I mean, he was under the tutelage of a different trainer, and who's a fairly respected and decent trainer, good trainer by that. But you get James, and
he's
James
a good
is yeah. And, but this is your fighter here, and when you get him back and you see him in the first day of the ring, a trainer always has different methods and different styles of training a fighter. So is it a hard transition to try to mold him back to what you had him? I mean, has that been an effect here between you guys, or has he just kind of fell right back into what you guys, where you guys had left off?
He fell right back into what we do. We don't, when we get ready to spar, we're not sparring like, oh, jab, throw. We're sparring like knock him out, keep punching him until he falls on the floor and get in a fetal position, or say, I quit. So I line guys up and I make him fight, you know, or I let them fight him. And I tell them to beat the hell out of him and don't stop. Just keep beating him. And if he can't take it in this gym, if he can't take it in the ring, then he's not ready to fight. So the first week he got back, he was shell-shocked to me. He was like in a different, like, you know, but after that first week, it's been 1-2, curse. It's been about, I bet you he didn't crack about 4 people ribs. Within the last 10 days, he cracking ribs. He's knocking people out with 16-ounce gloves on. His timing coming back, because there's only one way to train in my place. Either you're going to whoop some ass or you're going to get your ass. That's the only way I know how to train. I'm not going to baby you and go, oh, let him do it. No. Point blank, no. Either you got to bring it or go home.
Right.
And either he was going to bring it or go home, he's still there. When I say run, we don't run. We do everything to the extreme.
You know, his comeback was anticipated, but You think the rush of amount of fights that he was put in, was that too much, you think?
No.
I mean,
no, it was perfect. James is the type of fighter, the more fights he has, the hotter he gets, the better he is. But if you're not getting yourself in condition, if you're not mentally focused, you're not mentally prepared, that's why I like old school boxing. They wonder why they could fight that many fights. They would fight two or three times a week because they were used to it. When we trained, I would train to spar us every day. James, when he first come back trying to spar every day, his whole body was sore. He couldn't hardly move.
Wow.
We spar at least four or five times a week. So we do it. And the reason we do it is we do it over and over and over and over and over until our bodies, our muscular structure, our frame, everything gets immune and used to sparring five times a week. And you never get tired. You don't overtrain. You overtrain when you undertrain. When you're used to undertraining, and people go, oh, they overtrained, they left it in the gym, because you're not used to training.
Right.
My mom used to put me out in that field and make me work 12 hours, so I was used to working 12 hours. It didn't faze me. I worked 12 hours. Whatever I had to do, I did. And my body, my structure, everything built to it. James Kirkland's structure and body and muscular and endurance is made to fight a lot. That's just how it is. That's how he's been training. When I first got to the gym, he was 12 years old. He sparred 10 rounds every day. When I first got there, I thought it was the norm to spar 10 rounds every single day, hit the bag 10 rounds, jump rope for an hour. You in the gym for 3 hours. You get up in the morning. Everybody say, James, everybody else running their 5 miles. Why don't you get that bag and carry it for 5 miles? Because that's going to set you aside from a cheater.
Do you think it's important for him to fight that guy again? To fight Ishida?
It could be, and it could be or could be not. If Ishida is going to continue to fight and he wins his next couple of fights and he's still winning, that means he got something. So James is going to have to show that this, you know, I am capable of beating this man. Now, if Ishida go lose the next three or four fights, no. What would he pay?
Right.
If you can understand what I'm saying.
It's
just like everybody was saying, should Ortiz go back and fight Manana or the guy he lost to? No, he went and fought and beat something bigger.
Right.
So either he's going to have to get something bigger, and, you know what I'm saying? But if this guy is continuing to win, I think he needs to rematch him. If the guy's proven, I'm still winning. I'm still here. Of course he needs to, but if the guy goes and loses three or four fights, what is it going to pay or show that for James to fight him? But I said if that guy wins his next two or three and James wins his next two or three, yes, he should, because he done what nobody else has done. And he deserved that chance to say, this wasn't a fluke, this wasn't this. I'll whoop James Kirkland's ass and I can do it again. But the difference is going to be that Ann Wolf's going to be in the corner.
Yeah.
Could you tell, you know, I've covered Fish for a long time, and just looking at his body in those three fights, could you tell that he just wasn't fully trained, even not talking to him during that period? His body looked softer to me. He looked a little slower to me. Did you see the same things?
I knew he wasn't the same because I know what we do, and I know nobody else don't know what I do.
Right.
And they just not going to do what I do. I know that. And he is used to doing what I do to him and what pops. You know, pops is the mind and the mindset, and I'm just like really, I guarantee you Kenny Adams is not going to run James Kirkland until he throws up. Kenny Adams is not going to run, make James Kirkland get in the heat at 125, 100, put him in some heat that's hot enough to fry egg and make him stay in there till he's about to pass out. Because by the time he try to make him do it, James will tell him, to hell with you, I'm not doing this. Because guess what? I'm going to tell you the difference. I'm going to get in the heat with him and say the first one leave is a punk.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
Now, do you guys know who you're fighting? You guys are fighting next week, June 24th. Do you know who you're fighting yet? And how long has your camp been? Has this been enough time to get him ready to get right back in there?
Yeah, it has. I had him. I want to see what I saw, see how I am. He's so sharp. He's just knocking these guys, you know, at first. And every time I say, I'm going to get somebody even tougher, I'm going to get two guys, I'm going to get somebody bigger and tougher. He is putting people to sleep in some 16 ounces.
Wow.
He is literally, you know one thing about me. If he wasn't, I'd be like, he's still something missing out of him. Because the first week I was like, ooh, something might be missing out of him. But after I kept on just pressing him and beating him and just dogging him and just going either it's still the same James Kirkland in there and I'm finna see, or he's just a shell of himself and we don't even need to waste our time.
You know, it's
still the same James Kirkland in there.
You know, and we get a lot of questions here on the message board and on Twitter, you know, from our listeners. And one of our listeners is asking that. He said on his last two fights, Kirtland looked a little cold in the opening rounds. He wants to know if you noticed that, and if you did, what exactly do you do to correct something like that with James?
It wasn't even that he was cold. What I looked at when I first looked at James Kirkland when he came out, I didn't see that demon in his eyes. I didn't see that focus in his eyes. I didn't look at the softness in his body. I didn't look at that he was cold. The guy is right. I didn't look at the end on red short. You know, I looked at in his eyes. I didn't see that kill. Like, I'm going to try to kill this man. I didn't see that in none of those. In the first fight, I seen a little bit. In the last second or two, I didn't see that. I didn't see it in his eyes. I did not see it. All this James Kirkland don't have a chin and this and that and this. No, you could look in his eyes and see that was not the same person. Point blank.
Right.
Could it be a little bit?
You told me before, I think it was the Alan Conyers fight, that you guys were rushed out to the ring a little bit and that you normally had to kind of tire James out just a little bit in the ring or in the dressing room. And it didn't seem like he was that guy this time out.
No, even with the Alan Cunha fight, James wasn't on top point. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't training like 100. When let me tell you, when I really train James Kirkland, when I said we are going to train, is when he fought Joel Julio.
Yeah.
I trained him for that fight. All of the other fights, a lot of fights, James was still doing this, taking the back door here, there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
For the Joel Julio fight, I trained that man. Joel Julio hit him with, and another fight that I really trained, we trained hard because we wasn't even in Texas, is when he fought Muhammad Saeed. And Muhammad Saeed was 25-5, and he was a big old middleweight. And if you see what James did to him.
Yeah.
Now, Alan Cunha, James didn't really train that hard for Alan Cunha, and he still was messing around and fooling around, and I was constantly trying to say, you got to start taking everybody serious, taking them serious, and so he learned for the Alan Cunha fight.
Did you ever have any doubt that he would come back? It seemed to me like he was, you know, in talking to him, he was kind of avoiding it, and that going to Vegas and it was like he wasn't taking responsibility for everything that had gone on and was trying to go on his own. Did you just feel like he needed some time to kind of work things out for himself and that eventually he would return?
You can't say when you have kids, he's not the only, you know, like I said, the way our gym runs, if my amateurs or any kids I have, they leave, they know that door is always open because the first thing I'm trying to do is make you a better man than a fighter. Because once you bring a fighter around full circle, then you bring a man around full circle as a man, it's easier for him to become a fighter. So a lot of these coaches, they haven't dealt with these kids for years and years and years. I build kids up from ground zero. I have some 15-year-olds that have been with me since they were 6 years old.
Wow.
They've some 16-year-olds. So they're 10, you know what I'm saying, they've been with me for 10 years. You think that they're going to go out and listen to somebody else say, do this? No, they're not going to do it. So it's like, let him go out, and I still wish the best for him. I wanted him to make it. I still thought if somebody would train him good, he still had the opportunity to try to make it. but I just don't think that a lot of people know how to get to his mindset the way I do.
I agree.
Everybody else that's in my gym too, my daughter, everybody that's in our gym, because they know that one thing about me, I'm not playing. This ain't about no money. I am
right.
not playing. We finna go out here and rip this dude. We're gonna do something so evil to this man, and I'll be serious. I'm dead serious. And they know I'll be, James know that I am serious. And he's serious, ain't no playing in it. Like you said, he dripping wet with sweat because we not in there playing, and he in top shape. For me, do you know every fight that I fought James Kirkland, he get up and run the day of the fight. That's the type of shape he be in. Because if you sit in the room and lay up all day, you used to running every morning anyway. So
right.
I knew what I said. James didn't run the morning of the fight.
Mm. When you mention that, you know, mindset and mind frame, in a lot of ways, you know, James has been compared to to Mike Tyson, you know, and when Mike lost Cusumada, you saw the change in him. You saw that the seriousness of the sport was no longer there with him. And with you, I think that's what was lacking. A lot of fight fans felt the same way when you were not on that corner and you didn't have the advice that he was normally used and accustomed to. I think that's what fell apart for him in a lot of ways. But now that he's lost, and you got a lot of fight fans wondering and questioning, because the stigma of James was that he had this fear factor about him, but that is now out the door. Does that make your job tougher?
Guess what? I'm laughing. You know why? Half of the sparring partners that came, they were like, yeah, we'll come. Knocked their ass, knocked out. One dude just came, he went one round and got knocked smooth out. Then another dude came, he went, got knocked. They was like, I thought that was who I was going to see on TV. So in Texas, guess what? The fear factor is back in Texas. You know why? Because they're like, who in the hell is that? That's not what I seen on TV.
Right.
I said, you didn't see me on TV. So I'm glad they not scared. That gives me something I didn't have at first. Uh-huh. I couldn't tell Jay. Now I am so glad that nobody's scared of him. I am so happy. But guess what? Now we get to take advantage that they're gonna come. And I tell you what, I'm not saying that he's gonna do this, and this, but if James keeps going at the pace he's going from the training camp, the fear factor will be back very soon, because I'm telling you, that man is going to start knocking people out in them 16s, and you would not believe the first week he got his ass beat up. He got
right.
He got beat up the first week. The first week and a half, it's like he got literally beat. Now he just thought he's knocking them out. I'm serious. So I'm glad about that. And usually when somebody gets beat like that, it does something to their confidence. It does something to, you know, it's like that egg being cracked, and you can't put it back together again, you know. But not from what I'm seeing, because today I had to, like, literally get in the ring and go, no. You know what I'm saying? And the first week I wasn't having to do that. Second week I wasn't having to, I didn't have to start getting in the ring and go, no, don't knock him out. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Well, I'm excited to see the work. I don't know if this one's going to be shown on. I think it is actually going to be shown.
I think it's going to be shown on.
Telefutura.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're not going to see what you've seen then, and I guarantee you that.
you
might not see what was when he was in his prime, but he well back on his way. I'm saying that. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying that because what a lot of people in Texas or anywhere that knows Ann Wolf, they know that I won't even go sit in that corner if I don't think you're ready to kill or be killed. So James was ready to kill when he fought Ishida, but he was ready to kill somebody, but he wasn't ready to if he got killed.
Right, right.
That full circle to kill or be killed, not just kill. And if you know that you might get killed, you're going to fight like you out your mind, because you understand that you were him. He didn't have that in his mindset.
Absolutely.
He just
ran
in his mindset. He
was
just gonna whoop him.
Hey, and do you mind if we patch in a few fans that want to say hi to you really quick?
No, I don't.
Okay, let me patch in Jermaine, who's been waiting patiently. Jermaine, you're on live right now, Leaving the Ring with Anna Wolf. Go ahead and ask your question or your statement you wanted to say to her.
Oh, hello, Anna. I've just been enjoying your style and, you know, your whole interview tonight. I'm a huge fan of yours. You know, I believe Lala Ali ducked you plenty of times. I think you're the greatest female boxer I've ever seen. I love your training style. You know, I would love to see you back on, like, HBO in the corner doing your thing. You know, I truly respect your style. I mean, you're very underrated and you're a very, very joy to watch. And I'm just glad that I had the opportunity to speak with you. And
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I haven't really any questions because y'all covering everything tonight. But do you know who he's going to fight next?
No, we don't know, but I told him, I was honest with him. I said, listen, don't put him in there with nobody tall first coming back, and don't put him in there with nobody left-handed. Allow him to see what he's going to do with just a normal fighter that can fight. Don't put him in there. I really just don't want no bum, because then what you got? You still one day got to fight somebody that got some fire. So,
right.
you don't want to put him in there with a world champion, but you want to bring him back, but don't baby him too much. I don't like you to baby him at all. But you got to know matching is just a big part of boxing as everything else is. And for the first time, I am, like, wondering what's going to happen. I never wondered what's going to happen. I knew we was going to get in there and do our thing. But from what I see, he's starting to take my wondering away. Because the first 10 days, I was like, oh, I was wondering. But after this last 2 weeks, my wondering is kind of easing on away. I'm getting this. It's like, you know, when your kid comes out, you know that what they be able to handle themselves because you know what you taught them at home. So he's starting to make that wonder for me go away, you know.
You know, what about that, about your career, Ann? I mean, to me personally, being a fan and watching you fight and one of the most exciting female fighters to date, it seemed like your career was cut off short. Were you satisfied on the accomplishments that you've done?
They talk about Layla, they talk about Christy, they talk about a lot of people. A lot of people don't know I held 8 world titles in 4
right.
different weight classes. I defended them. I defended all of them. But my career is perfect because guess what I got? I got about 20 or 30 kids that I keep out of the street. That's what I do. I don't worry about the boxing. I got some of the baddest kids that, I'm saying, keeping these kids off the street is my career. That's what I do, and being a parent. Past that, I don't have to ask for nothing. I don't have no type of request because I'm blessed already. I have everything I need. I don't need to be in Islam. I don't need to be nothing. If James was just to become a good man and a good father to his children, I don't need him to box. But if he's going to decide to box, you be the best at whatever you be, even if somebody's going to be better than you, and somebody eventually is going to beat him. But for now, when we meet in the center of that ring, I'm going to try to do something to you that no other man has ever done in their lives. I don't have to do nothing. If I'm going to put that I'm a parent, I'm a parent. If I put that I'm going to get kids out of the streets, I'm going to give 100% to get them out of the streets. And when I boxed, I had 100% that I was going to try to do the most. I never want you to even say my name when I fought. I would want you don't even, if they said, who you fought, say, I wouldn't even say my name. That's how bad I want to whoop your ass.
Well, there you go. Well, Ann, hey, we thank you very much for taking the time and speaking to us here on Leaving the Ring. It was our pleasure. It was great having you on. Want to have you on again. I mean,
I said, the only thing I'd like to say is to the fans, you know, it seems like James is just a ruthless person, and he came back. He didn't give Ishita his just due because Ishita did beat him, and we don't have to say, well, Ishita beat James Kirkland. That's point blank. That's just the way it is. Now that I'm back, we're going to try to go and be good human beings first, and we're going to be good people first, and we're going to be killers in the ring, and that's what we're going to try to do. And we're going to try to build a fan base up to where people understand we just normal people trying to do something that's not normal.
Absolutely. And we can't wait
Fair
for
enough.
That comeback, you know. So
yeah.
Wish you guys all the best luck.
We appreciate
yeah,
it.
Thank you so much,
yes,
Ann.
Sir.
We'll
Thank
talk
you.
Soon. All right. Take
care. Take
care,
Ann. Well, there you go,
wow.
Miss Ann Wolf, talking to us about their, about herself and James Kirtland reuniting and to get them back on track. You know, we had a lot of calls. I'm sorry, I apologize. We've had her on for quite some time, and, you know, sometimes they have to go. But we'll definitely try to get her back on again so that the, you know, listeners and fans want to ask questions. So if you didn't have a chance, we didn't patch you in. We apologize. But
she is so honest. That's what I love about her. She just shoots it straight, man. You know,
yeah.
That was very classy to say, look, you know, he beat us, end of story, but now we get to move forward. And from her vantage point, too, like she said, I wasn't in that corner. James
right.
is 2-1 with Kenny Adams. James is undefeated with Ann Wolf and was moved towards the title shot under Ann Wolf. If she can bring him back to form, you know, if she can't, no one can, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm willing to bet, you know, she would have been honest if she may not even have done the interview if she didn't believe that he was back and in good form under her care. So I'm excited to see it. I was a little, like she is, I was a little worried. Like, he's coming back a little soon. You know, they're going to put him back on TV, back in the same spot. But, you know, like she said, you know, my worry is going a little bit away for the guy. And I, you know, we need more exciting fighters. So I'm pretty stoked that they're coming back this fast.
You know, yeah, you're right. I mean, it is kind of fast. But at the same time, I think if they allowed him to stay out of the ring, you know, I mean, you damn if you do, you damn if you don't with this situation, in my opinion. Sheeta, some folks believe it was a fluke. Some folks say it wasn't a fluke, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and whoever he's being put up against, really honestly, is going in with the upper hand because he's getting a guy that was knocked out in the first round. I mean, he was dropped 3 times. He wasn't knocked out. Wasn't, you know, but he was waved off after being put down 3 times. So he's obviously going up with the bigger handshake than Kirtland. Kirtland's going in with demons, and Ann Wolf is going in with the bigger task to see whether or not if all the bearings are there for her fighter. So I say it's a pretty good gamble, in my opinion. I think this is a great gamble to find out, look, let's get him back in there. Let's shake these demons off. Don't allow him to think about it too long so that he sits out on the outside of the ring thinking, man, you know, maybe I'm not a fighter. Maybe I'm done. Maybe this prison time did do something to us. But I'm glad that she pointed it out. Look, he was locked up before. Let's not make that an excuse. You know?
Yeah.
And,
she made a good point, you know, about the fact that you know, he'd been in jail before, and
right.
he had to come back. And it's the thing. The difference was this time was that he'd become an HBO fighter. You know, when he went in before, I think he was only like 11-0 at that point. He went in November, like December, sometime around there of 2003, and so he was only like 11-0. I think he was still with Main Events at that time. He comes back out, signs with Gary Shaw, and then they fought a ton of times. Before he got on TV, I want to say that the Billy Lyle fight was the first one on Showbox.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Ossie Duran, Saeed after that, then Conyers. And Conyers, that was in 2007, November. You remember, that was the last Showbox show of the year, and that was when everybody went, whoa, who the hell is James Kirkland? Nobody was paying attention to him before. And then from there, he jumped to HBO with the Albert fight. But the point is that they had to fight him a lot of times, like 11 or 12 times, to get him back to form before he even got to TV when he returned from prison the first time. It's only been 3 fights back, and yeah, he got knocked out in that last one, or he got TKO'd in the last one. But, you know, it's going to be a long process getting him back to title contention. Because even when he started getting on TV, it was still about 4 more fights before he actually was able to move to the Julio fight, which moved him into position for a title shot. So it's going to
right.
take time, you know, but I think he's got a much better shot fighting under Ann Wolf. And I like the way she matched him, you know, like bring me somebody that's not going to get knocked out early. It's going to go a little rounds, but this is a standard fighter that's going to fight. Let's get him his confidence back, but give him some rounds. That's good matchmaking. That's smart, you know, and James is going to have to face that, getting punched, having to deal with it and move past
his loss to Ishida, you know. And we'll see. You know, look at Brady Prescott and Amir Khan. She made a great point. If Ishida has that kind of career where Brady Prescott sometimes wins, sometimes looks like crap, hasn't been impressive since stopping Amir Khan, is there really a big point to him fighting that guy? Not really. Not when you can move on to bigger and better fights that are probably more dangerous than that one. You know, and with Ishida, he's going to have to do the same thing. Keep winning, get on HBO, because Kirkland's going to probably be back to network. He's already fighting. He got knocked out in one round, and he's fighting, and where's Ishida's fight? He hasn't fought anybody yet. So we'll see how that goes.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and, yeah, I'm really excited. I want to see where James Kirkland is at. Really, really quick. There's going to be an event here at the Playboy Mansion, I believe. And just being told right now that we're going to be covering it. So shout out to Claudia, who's conducting it, and she's getting it all prepped up at the Playboy Mansion. She'll give me some more details next week about it. And I believe I think they want to come on too as well and talk about their event that's happening. Another event too. Last week we had like 2 weeks ago, I believe, Sacramento. Make sure you go down to Sacramento and check out the boxing event that's being held there. I don't even have the information in front of me right now because something's going on with my computer. It just froze. So hopefully you guys can hear me.
Don't touch anything.
Don't move. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. We're here live right now. If you want to talk some boxing, hey, let's chop it up. Let's patch in some fight fans. Let's get the recap of what they think about the two interviews we just conducted right now, one with Anna Wolf and the other one with Marco Antonio Rubio. What are you laughing about, bastard?
You better not say my name. That's how much I want to kick your ass. That quote is awesome.
Yeah.
That's just absolutely correct, yeah.
So she has some pretty great quotes. I mean, she said one at a press conference. She goes, when they came down to San Jose to fight Julio, the love child, she said, look, we're not coming here to talk trash. We're coming here to fight. Let these two young men get in the ring and let them chop wood and let the chips fall where they may. And I was just like, whoa. Like, hey, that just got me pumped up. You know what I mean? I was ready to get in on it too as well. Let's patch in some fight fans. Let's go with Victor, who wants to talk Anna Wolf. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving in the ring.
What's up, bro? It's me again, Victor.
Yep, so, Victor. How you doing, brother?
All right, bro. Just wanted to speak up on that James Kirkland situation. I think it's a good move for him because when he barely started with Anna Wolf, I think his condition was his best boxing tool he had. And then when he got out of prison the second term,
right,
he looked more flabby, more slow, and I think that's why he was vulnerable to the KO when that Japanese fighter got him. It's just not the same James Kirkland we've seen in the early fights he fought with Joel Julio and all that. I think James Kirkland disciplined him very well, and Anna Wolf made James Kirkland, so I think that's the best move that James Kirkland did for his career.
I think
I
so,
remember,
too.
Talking to him, I talked to him after his first fight back. We're sitting there, and I remember him, and I talked to Kenny Adams, too, and there seemed to be a disparity in how to train. And James is like, you know, I do things that nobody understands in that gym, and I'm always wanting to go,
go, go.
Well,
he even told us, too. He told us that, too, in the interview. He said, look, you know, I do what my trainer tells me what to do, but when it gets closer to the fight, I end up doing what I want to do, what I think I should do to get ready, that what I learned with Ann Wolf.
Yeah, and Kenny at the same time was like, well, I kind of have to pull him back a little bit and even taper him in a way that he doesn't understand that I'm doing, you know, not letting him do certain things at certain times. And I think that right there was a key to me that this might not work out, that Kenny's an older guy. He's no nonsense and a disciplinarian, but that's like being in training camp, like in the military, the things that she does. I mean, it's, you know, it's like a Rocky montage where, you know, they're working out in a garage and they've got, you know, bizarre different tools that they use. And like she said, he's fighting two guys at the same time. I mean, there's video on YouTube of him sparring a heavyweight and beating the hell out of him. And also, I believe it's Brian Vera. There's a video of that, him sparring. He about knocks Brian Vera out when he's helped us on the ropes. And there was some criticism, like, that's bullshit. You know, how could they let that happen? That's how they roll there. And
right.
I mean, she's got, like, six-year-olds that fight like that. And 9-year-olds that fight like that. And they have been doing this their whole lives. And that's, James started there. I believe he was 6 years old and then 9 when Ann kind of joined the team. And that's all he knows. I mean, this is a kid that was making $5 a round at age 9 to spar people.
Right.
You know, so this, that's what he needed to return to. Go back to your roots. Go back to where
and
it all started.
She matched. And, you know, the thing is that she matched them, too, with the training methods. Like she said right now, look,
yeah.
The difference is that Kenny Adams probably told him to do this, but she was like, look, I'd go out there and perform with him to pretty much go like, hey, if I can do it and you can't, then you're pretty much, you're a punk. You know, you wussed out. And I think that's the mentality that Kirtland needed. He needs that extra push. He needs that. He needs somebody to match his mind frame of no nonsense. And I
right.
thought, I, you know, Kenny Adams taking nothing away from him because he's a good, great trainer himself. But particular trainers fit with particular fighters. Not every trainer works with every fighter. And that's why the example of Mike Tyson and Cusumano was a good – to me, it's a good example because of the fact that is Cusumano was the only guy that was able to get in the head of Mike. And make Mike
yeah.
do the things that Mike needed to do, you know. And James leaving and Wolf, whatever their problem was, you could see that with his fights. You could see there was something missing, you know. His conditioning,
everything was missing, bro.
Everything, yeah, you know. And
everything.
And now that I think that you got her back into the mix, you just got to sit back and go, okay. This was the roller coaster ride that I was waiting for because I think that's what we were waiting for, Victor. When he made that comeback, he gets released. We were all like, okay, cool. Let's see what happens from here. But it wasn't the same line that we got on. You know what I mean? If you go to Grand America, you want to get on the Demon. You go to Disneyland, you want to get on the Space Mountain. You know what I mean? It wasn't the same ride. We were going on the teacup ride.
Yeah.
You know?
He just wasn't ready, and you could just tell. And I think now, you know, he's going to be ready. And like she said, you know, she was unsure of him, and then she just kind of worked him, and got him to a point where now he's ready. And I agree with you that his conditioning was ridiculous before, and that was his greatest strength. You know, he's a smart fighter. He gets hit by the right hand a little bit too much. He gets out of position, gets out of balance. But he's a whirlwind in there, and he's a guy that you think you can outbox him. Like Joel Julio's plan was to outbox him early, let him tire out, and then take over in the back end of the fight. Well, by the time they got there, he had the hell beaten out of him during
right.
that plan. And, you know, James is going to need a guy that, you know, when he's at the top of his game, he may get beaten again, but it's going to take a guy that's just as strong as him, maybe a little bit bigger or taller with, you know, solid skills, but that's going to be able to match him energy-wise throughout the fight and be able to take that kind of punishment. There's not a lot of fighters out there that have been trained the way James has been trained by Ann. And so I wonder, you know, I always thought that unconventional tactics are going to have to be used against him. You know, you're going to have to train much harder than you normally do. These guys that take time off between fights, like she's saying, you can't fight like 3 times a year and then also only train 3 times a year. You know, James, as soon as he wins, will be back on Monday, you know, barring a cut or a loss. He'll be back Monday. And
yeah,
he'll be training.
Something. Road work or yeah, some type
yeah.
of Vic, I'm going to put you back on hold, okay, because we got a lot of fight fans right now on the hold.
Thanks,
I want to talk some boxing. No problem, brother.
Thanks
for calling in.
Thanks, man, for calling in. Have a good one. You too.
Let's really quick, let's patch in D, who tried to patch in earlier. D, what's up, brother?
What's
You're on live right now, leaving the ring. What's on your mind,
yeah,
brother?
My bad, man. Earlier,
okay.
Man, my phone was acting up. But I caught the ass end of that Ann Wolf. And, oh, man, I can't wait, man. I know she's going to get him in top shape, man, because that's what it was, man. After watching that fight against
right.
Machida, I know 30 times I watched it, and he wasn't moving, just, you know, the speed. He was just coming forward, conditioning just wasn't the same. You could tell that.
Absolutely.
You
know, no, I think so, too.
He's gotten hit, you know, way harder, in my opinion, by other fighters and walked right through it and continued to attack.
Well, the love child was landing mm-hmm. some pretty solid, you know, right hands on James, and James was just hustling right through it. I mean, it looked like he was, you know, Julio, who is a great, I mean, the guy was labeled as a puncher in the start of his career. He was landing some hellacious shots on Kirtland, and Kirtland was acting like a piece of steel. You know what I mean? Just taking it and walking through and then landing big shots of his own. So, you're absolutely right.
Definitely.
You know, and Wolf, does
he have a fight date?
I thought I read
at the end of the month sometime.
Next week, next Friday.
Yeah, next Friday.
That's what I thought, yeah, at the end of the month. But no opponent, though. Name yet, though.
Dreaded TBA, I believe he's fighting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it'll be the victim to be named later. But we'll see. You know, I mean, he could be caught with some guy. You know, I mean, nobody thought anything of Ishida, although looking back in America, you know.
I don't know, man. Cut you off, man.
It's okay.
I don't know, man. He should win. Nope, you know. That might be a little too soon right there, man. I didn't expect to see him until September, maybe, man.
Yeah, but, you know,
yeah.
Work like a horse, man. Get in shape. That's my whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they only had him. I think they've had him for a pretty normal training camp, maybe 6 to 7 weeks. He's been back with them. I'd have to look at it. You know, it's been a while since they've been back together. I actually haven't had a chance to talk to James himself. He's just been in beast mode. You know, usually he's hard to get in training camp. He turns the phone off. Or he'll change the message to "Don't call me until after the fight." So that's why I was able to get Ann, but I didn't even bother calling James because I'm just like, do your thing, because that's
right.
A pre-fight ritual. But yeah, I mean, maybe it is a little soon, but she seems to have him back in form, and it's not like he got knocked cold. He didn't get like Paul Williams. He got TKO'd, and they looked like flash knockdowns. I mean, he got up and his body wasn't reacting well, but he looked at his face and his eyes were clear. And I think that's why he said, he never hurt me. I don't think he felt hurt. I just don't think he had his legs for that fight.
He did not have his legs in that fight.
And some of the things I heard off record that I won't repeat here, I'll just say he didn't really train for that fight. You know, I would say, I mean, the way Ann was, you know, the way they train, they spar, like she said, every day, 5 times a week, sometimes 4 times a week, every day, you know, and then, like, I think Saturdays they work on something else.
I mean, if you keep current of what happened with that, I mean, it's not even an argument. The guy was blowing up in between fights.
Right.
You know, 15,
you know,
20 pounds, that's not good. It's consistent
right.
He was fighting, you know, that was not good at all. Hey, D, we're going to put you back on hold because we still got some other callers on hold, okay?
All right, man. Hold on, man. I got a quick question for you.
Go ahead, brother.
What y'all know about this dude, Amir Mansour?
Amir Mansour? I don't know.
YouTube this dude, rough. And,
okay.
Shoot, man, this dude's an animal, man. He's a heavyweight.
Oh, this heavy
Amir Mansour, Mansour.
Okay, let me.
I'm YouTubing him.
I thought maybe y'all would have done heard about dude, man. This dude. Huh?
I'm telling Dave that his computer's frozen, so maybe he shouldn't.
Yeah, I know. It's not letting me go in there.
God.
It's a matter of time, man. This dude is an animal, man. And he's only got like 10 fights. He ain't been past the first round yet, I don't believe.
Are you spelling his last name?
Mansour?
Yeah, I'm watching him knock people out right now. My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's an animal, man. And I heard about him last night.
The hardcore, they're calling him, right?
Hardcore Mansour.
I'm going to check him out. I'm going to have to check him out then.
He's 38 years old?
He's what?
He did 9 years in prison, man. His body looks nothing like the fights that I've seen, man. He's chiseled.
Yeah,
and he actually has a little bit of skill.
We have to look a little bit deeper
right
than him. Yeah.
He looks really good, but he's 38 years old? Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
I didn't know he was that old right there now. I don't think he's that old, though.
Gabriel, you don't age in prison, man.
Apparently not.
You get your food
Damn.
Brought to you. You know what I'm saying? You get yard work, pump iron. You don't age in prison. Hey, D.
Uh-huh.
Hey, thanks, brother, for letting us know about this. We'll
Definitely.
Check more into him, and I'll check
Definitely.
Him out, and then maybe we could try to get him on. We'll get him on leaving the
yeah,
ring here.
Definitely.
All right.
He's American, yeah. Okay. All right, fellas.
Yeah, he's out of Delaware. Out of
Delaware,
Wilmington,
huh?
In Delaware.
Okay.
38-year-old, 5'11", southpaw.
Whoa.
Yeah, YouTube him, folks. He is absolutely ripped, and he's killing people. But, you know, we'll see who he's...
5'11 is actually the perfect height for a puncher in the history of boxing and heavyweights, you know? I mean, you look at David Tua, who was 5'10", Mike Tyson, 5'11", almost breaking 5'11". 11, yeah, these guys, so I'm going to have to check them out, definitely check them out as soon as my computer starts acting up, man. But let's patch in another fight fan really quick before we do our fight schedule, because we only got like 30 minutes left here on Leaving the Ring. Luis wants to talk about Colossal signing with Golden Boy. Luis, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
I'm very good, big brother. Thanks for having me on here. I was just curious who... You know, you guys obviously know of Collazo. I was curious who you guys would like to see him get in the ring with, either Saul Alvarez or, you know, any other 154 guy. I would love to. I pray every day that he fights Cotto. I don't know if that's ever going to happen in his lifetime, but who would you guys like seeing Collazo chop it up in there with?
You know, I'd like to see him get in with Canelo, but I don't think that would happen. What do you think, Gabe?
Yeah, I don't
he just got signed by Golden Boy. I'm sure they're investing a lot more in Canelo, and they don't want him to get in there with
right.
the slick southpaw. But,
you know
who else at 154? Who do you find interesting, or who do you think could legitimately beat Collazo? I love constructive criticism. I love to bring this back home to him and tell him, look, these guys think this guy could beat you or whatever. Who do you guys think is a good match for Collazo? Who you guys want to see him in there with? We obviously see what he did to Myrtle. He changed his whole style up for 12 rounds. You know, he's a counterpuncher. He was pushing Myrtle back the whole fight. So,
right.
You know, I want to know where you guys think he's at this point in his career and who you want to see him in the ring with.
What's interesting about the press release is that it said they talked about him being a welterweight. And doing things in the welterweight division, and I wonder.
Oh, I'm sure he can make welterweight, but who's going to fight him at welterweight?
Well, hasn't
got a fight at welterweight
right.
all his career. You know, if it is,
yeah.
he's on a 3-week notice at Sugar Shane Mosley. Like, you know.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, being with Golden Boy means you're going to get HBO dates. That you know, you're going to get good purses. I think he was kind of locked into that Don King contract, and it was just kind of. Thrown by the wayside. And he's a tough fighter. He's almost like a Winky Wright with a little more power. You know, he's a style matchup problem for everybody. So it's going to be hard to see, you know, who they would match him with. I mean, let's say Aris Landilaro wins. That's a good fight for him. Or even if Paul Williams wins that fight, that's another good fight for
Louis
Collazo.
That's what I was thinking right there. Paul Williams,
you know?
is a good name for him. You know, I mean... The thing is that Luis Collazo is a guy that still is young and fresh in the mind. I mean, style-wise,
that's the best part I feel about him, that his wear and tear is only experience. Like,
right.
anytime he's been in a little war, it's a little experience. It's not like people are really, like, taking him out of what he's doing or out of the fight. You know, I've never seen him taken out of a fight other than early in his career, and it was by the referee. You know, everything happens for a reason, but, you know, I just wanted to hear you guys' thoughts. And, you know, Paul Williams, you turned down a fight against my brother, to be honest with you. Things behind the scenes. My brother's been ready to fight against Paul Williams for a long time. They sparred over 100 rounds when Williams was getting ready for his second fight against Quintana. So I know what personally happened in there. You know, I'm not, you know, you can't boast on what happens in the gym. You know, is what happens at fight night. You know, you see what Paul Williams, I think he has, you know, more boxing talent than Martinez. Martinez is just a better all-around athlete and, you know, caught him with what he likes to do best.
You know what's the sad thing, though, here, Luis, is that the problem with Collazo is that he's more of a feared man. You know, when you think of a puncher, people go like, well, that's a feared guy. You know, you don't want to face a puncher. But a lot of times a puncher just brings just that. A punch, a fighter, a slick boxer with a good punch is more feared, in my opinion, than anybody else, because the styles make fights, and that guy can make you look terrible. You know, and he kind of leaves. Even though he signed with Golden Boy, I even sat there and I go, wow, okay, he signed with Golden Boy. But at the same time, I'm looking at, is Golden Boy looking at him as an opponent, or is he, are they looking at him to build him up? You know
his
what I mean?
Brother,
because
I've been with my brother for, you know, as long as I can remember, and I'm happy he's just going to get the shot at any, if they try to make him opponent, he's going to become the victor. You know, like, I'm happy. I'm looking at his lineup, and I'm real happy with Golden Boy.
What about this matchup?
I can see anyone from Cotto, Canelo, and any of the 147 guys. They're either
Cintron?
Moving up or
like
they're moving out.
Here's a matchup at 147, and he's fighting there. New York fighter, Madison Square Garden, Louis Collazo, Paulie Malignaggi.
Oh, I would love to see that.
They're great friends. I've seen them. They're great friends. You know,
you know,
and that is a great fight. I would never want to waste that, because, you know, I never want to be against Paulie Malignaggi, because I love him so much. My family loves him dearly. You know, at the end of the day, it's business, you know, but
right.
I don't know.
You know,
I'm not the boss of that. I'm not a matchmaker. That's a great fight. What do you think will be the outcome of that fight?
My brother was
running through. You know, you talk about Kirkland and whatever, but I think his chin is more underrated than his punch. You know, his punches wear people down. We've seen this throughout fights. You know, Hatton made it by the skin of his teeth, and I had him beating Hatton, and I had him beating Berto too. If you give Berto 6 rounds. Taking away the point because he was holding on for his life, he loses. Letterman had him up 2 points.
That would be a fun fight.
Ortiz is too green. I think Ortiz had a great, great fight against Myrtle, but that was a lot of momentum. You know, the momentum just shifted. He was practically out on his feet. And he, you know, the momentum that he had, he just kept on with it. And I admire that young boy, but he's real green when it comes to certain tactics. Dealing with a slick fighter as my brother.
I'd like to see Collazo back in with Berto then. I mean, at 147, we talk about 140. Who's left?
He can't attack flies if he was shit, bro. He can't attack flies if he was shit. He fought Luis Collazo because it was mandatory. He had to fight Luis Collazo, and I want people
I
to know
that. I think
he
has to fight him still. I mean, he's coming off of a loss. Collazo
signed
with Golden Boy. You know what I mean?
True, I think we should get a shot at the money, like everyone else is getting shot at money. Like, you know, I can't believe you guys dedicate a whole show to James Kirkland, not taking anything away from him, but he got knocked out by Machida, and he's never been known as a boxer. He's just great, like Mike Tyson was great when it comes to that he's a world winner in the ring. But, you know, when he catches someone at his height and maybe even a little bit taller, like one of you guys mentioned, he's in for a whole lot of trouble because he's
The reason we had her on is because he's fighting next week and we wouldn't get her next week. But the other thing is that Louis hasn't been fighting. He just had a fight, but he had a long layoff.
Fighters
fight. You know, that's the only way to keep yourself in the public eye is fighting. And I understand, you know, I talked to him about it. You know, he had a lot of like managerial issue and promotional issues, and that, you know, look at Nonito Donaire, you know, look at Angulo right now. That kind of stuff can really tie you up, you know. And I understand that, you know.
Unbelievable. The politics of boxing are killing it for the fans, man. Like, you know, people who love to are going to be enjoying this Mayweather versus Ortiz fight, but we really want to see him against Pacquiao. Like, you know, I think Ortiz doesn't have the experience to get in there with a boxer like Mayweather. You know, and the politics are killing boxing. You know, it's a great fight. Don't get me wrong. It's just Mayweather, you know, I never seen him take a fight that's too risky. This looks like a high-risk fight, but Mayweather knows better than us. And I think Mayweather's going to easily beat Pacquiao. That's just my opinion, guys. And thanks for having me on the show. I hope I don't take too much of your time.
Oh, no.
We're going to be here forever. All right, well.
Yeah, man.
I think Mayweather is going to kill Pacquiao, man. I'd rather my brother fight Pacquiao 2 times than fight Mayweather once, because Mayweather he doesn't just, like, beat you physically, he mind fucks you in the ring. You know, he's done it to all his opponents.
Yeah.
He mind fucks them with the game. You know, it's called boxing for a reason. And
Absolutely.
Mayweather does that to everyone. And, you know, people are really really not used to seeing Pacquiao, and Pacquiao's not used to seeing himself get hit and outwitted in the ring. After a couple rounds of frustration, we saw what happened to him against Morales. He gets desperate. What does that mean? He's going to come into the straight right hands. I can't wait till they fight, because I'm going to bet all my life savings on this guy. I know I'm going to win. I'm tight that Pacquiao don't take the test, because I'm going to make money off this.
Right. Well, at least, hey, man, well, hey, thanks for calling in, brother. We're going to put you back on hold, man. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
No, it was a pleasure speaking to you guys. I'm going to try to always join in on Thursdays. This is a whole lot of fun.
Hey,
and
yeah,
let's get a good appointment. Let's get a good opponent for Luis, man. These young guys at 154, yo, I pray for Cotto every day. I get on my knees. I pray to Jesus, white Jesus, black Jesus. We can never get a Cotto fight. That's what we need in Madison Square Garden. Why can we never get a Cotto fight? You know, like, unreal, bro.
It is, man. And you know what? I like to see that fight. I would like to see Collazo fight Kermit Cintron. I like to see him fight Monterosian. You know, I mean, there's a lot of good fights out there. I'm waiting. Look, this is what I'm going to do. Let's sit back just for a moment, and let's see what Golden Boy has planned and stored. And whatever they come up with, we'll have Collazo and yourself on, and then we're going to dissect it. How about that?
For the first time in my life, I'm holding my breath, because I trust Golden Boy. And like you said, either he's an opponent or, you know, he's going to showcase him.
That's what I'm wondering.
I would love to see him try to make him an opponent against someone, because Louis is going to eat their food. He's done it before, and I feel like he's peaking, guys. He's peaking.
Absolutely, brother. All right, man.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. I'm always going to call and bother you guys.
Hey, love no problem, brother.
Cool, man.
Take care, Louis. Yep, you know, I gotta go back again. You know, don't know what Golden Boy has planned for Luis Collazo. I'm curious. You know, when I saw that signing, when it was sent to us in the press release, I sat there and I said, okay, this is good. This is good for his career, but good for him in the areas of where they want to lead it to. You know what I mean, Gabe?
Yeah.
Want to use him as an opponent? Are they going to – because you know what? Boxing promoters do this like record labels. You know, like if you – like I'll give you an example, and let's see if it even makes sense to you guys. It makes sense in my head. But sometimes what makes sense in my head doesn't make sense when it comes out through my mouth. But sometimes when a promoter has – let's say they got Michael Jackson, okay? A record company has Michael Jackson, and he's popping and he's booming at the time. And then you get another guy that sounds similar to Michael – a record company will go and swoop that person up and sign them. And what they do is they shelf them. They promise them on a contract, we're going to record your album. We're going to, you know, let you do this, 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 and this, and this on your album. But never in the contract. And this is, you know, people out there that do music. You know, and if you want to know a little bit something about the music business, you need to fine-comb your contract. Because at the end of that contract, if it doesn't say anywhere in terms of being released and a release date, they could shelf you. And sometimes boxers are kind of played like that by promoters in a similar fashion. You know, we still got some calls calling in right now. We got 17 more minutes here. Gabe, you want to take another caller or should we go on?
Let's take another caller.
All right, let's take another caller. We got a few. Who's been on a while? Okay, let's go with Jose, who wants to talk about the Marco Antonio Rubio interview. Brother, what's up? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good, Jose. How you doing, brother?
Doing good. I just wanted to talk about that interview that you guys had earlier with Rubio.
Go ahead, brother.
And, I heard, Chavez, his next fight is going to be against Peter Manfredo. And, I don't know, everything that Rubio was saying about Chavez, the way he's being ducked by him and the way that they skipped him out of the title shot and him beating one of the top contenders, it's just, outrageous, the way they're pulling all this stuff on this guy. It makes me feel sorry for the guy.
Yeah, it does, man. It does.
He's like a champion with training wheels, you know? We'll take him off in a few years, but you know, just get used to wearing the belt. It's a little heavy, but you know, don't worry, we'll help you hold it.
Don't get no leche on it. Don't get no leche on the belt.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It really is. But, you know, that's boxing politics. See, he's gold, man. He's got that name.
Yeah.
But I like what Rubio's doing, though, here, though, Jose. I mean, I do like the fact that he's not, you know, that's that saying, a closed mouth don't get fed, you know. And
right.
And he did, you know, I'm giving, my thing is this. Like, I see a lot of people, you know, this social list networks that we have now, I see a lot of people, they put their thoughts on, like, Facebook or Twitter, you know, like, oh, I should get paid for this, and, you know, it takes me 3 hours to do this. And at the same time, I sit there, I go, that's cool, but put it in motion. And even when Rubio did that open letter, I said, I still was like, yeah, that's good, but put it in motion. He's being vocal about it. And to me, that's putting it in motion. You know what I mean? He's not just letting it be ink on paper. He's on that paper, he's actually putting a voice behind it. And that's sometimes how you get fights. You get underneath the skin of a fighter, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, Julio Cesar Chavez is still a person with feelings, and I don't care what anybody says. Criticism is a big blow. It's a big slap in the mouth. And when you hear another guy saying you're factory made, you know, you're a champion that's being his hand held, that really takes a strike to your ego. So
right.
How many times
and
do you need a...
It's funny that Chavez, he's been criticizing Canelo over his title shot that he got. And, I mean, he's doing the same thing. And, like, another thing, if he wants to build his own legacy, he needs to start fighting, like, the best competition out there. And,
right.
Like, Rubio's there, and then you got Martinez. But, like, I don't know if it's a done deal or what's going on, but, like, I heard, like, on Mexican TV that Chavez's next opponent was Peter Manfredo. And
that's,
I don't even think that guy's worthy of a title shot. Nah, he just—I don't know. It's not. He just.
They call it
I don't know. It's
optional,
it's just wrong.
It's an optional. It's an optional defense, which a lot of guys get, but you know, it's just a win in the bank. He gets him some experience, and yeah, I mean, and you know, it might actually be a good fight in the sense that there's going to be action, but at the same time, like, you know, Manfredo is not a guy that I think has a chance to win, you know. I mean, maybe against Chavez Jr., because I just don't think much of him. But, you know, I mean, Manfredo's been to the top of the mountain a few times to try to get a title or get a big win, and he comes up short. So, you know, I don't think that he's a second-tier guy, you know, and I don't think that he wins this fight. And it's probably, you know, who knows if it's going to be on HBO. It probably will be. You know, because they really want to be in that business with Chavez Jr. And it's just, you know, at some point you got to stop yelling about it and just be like, all right, you know, I'm not going to be complicit with my silence, but I think people get it, you know, that he's a paper champion. We don't think much of him. The thing that I would encourage people to do, all the people on Twitter and Facebook and message boards that bitch about Martinez getting treated like crap, I'm going to do the same thing because I think he's getting treated like crap. Go to his fights. Make the journey. When he announces he's fighting in Vegas, which I think they're probably going to do Vegas, or they're going to do back east, which makes sense back there for the UK fans. They're going to travel. They may not come to Vegas, but they probably would go to the East Coast. But, you know, book your flight, book your hotel, buy the ticket, show Bob Arum, show HBO, show all the boxing writers, everybody, that you're not just a fan that talks on Twitter and Facebook and message boards, but you put your money where your mouth is and go support that champion with your money by being ringside. I think that's really the only way that fans can be proactive, is to not buy pay-per-views that are crap and buy tickets to fights for fighters that they like.
Yep.
I think that's just a positive way of approaching it.
There you go. All right, Jose, thank you, brother, for calling in, man. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for calling in.
Really quick, some news here. You know, when you think of Brandon Rios, you think of F-bombs. When you think of Mikey Garcia, you think of a very subtle person that does systematic boxing and damage to another opponent in the ring. But these two gentlemen here, Brandon Rios has been criticized, you know. I mean, we got letters still from his interview here on Leaving the Ring from the first time he came on. About his F-bombs and this and that, okay? But to show you the lighter side of boxing. These guys are both holding a charity boxing function in Oxnard, California, this Saturday. You know, for the family of the amateur boxer Gustavo Rodriguez, who was shot and killed last week. Gustavo was an amateur fighter. He was only 17 years old, and he worked out of the gym of Rios and was under the tutelage of Robert Garcia, who was the chief trainer. So they're doing this fundraiser. If you have a chance and you're in Southern California, go out there to 1601 Pacific Avenue, Oxnard, California, and show your support. Like I said, they're going to be out there doing a charity boxing function for this young man that was 17 years old and had his life stolen away from him, Gustavo Rodriguez. So be sure to do that. You know, I mean, you hear criticism about particular fighters. We talked a little bit about Floyd, but then you see the lighter side of these guys. You know, at the end of the day, these are human beings as well. Anyways, let's go with our fight schedule here with
schedule?
Gabriel Montoya. Yeah, man.
We got 11 minutes. I'll make this quick.
Make it quick.
June 17th, Friday, 2011. And this actually reminds me, happy birthday, Roberto Duran. This is at the Arena Roberto Duran in Panama City, Panama. And Anselmo Moreno, 31-1 versus Lorenzo Parra, 31-2-1. I'm going Anselmo Moreno. I think this is for the WBA bantamweight belt. It's a good fight. It's going to be an exciting fight. Moreno is a come-forward guy, throws a ton of punches. He's big for the weight class. I really like this guy. He's kind of an unsung hero at this weight class. People are overlooking, and I think he could be a problem for a lot of people. Underneath that is Gennady Golovkin. He's an interim WBA middleweight title holder. He's 20-0 versus Kasim the Dream Uma, 27-7-1. It's going to be a hell of a fight, too. Both these guys are action fighters. I'm going Golovkin in this one, though. I think he's just younger, better, stronger. But Kasim Uma never underestimated.
God, it's hard to pick against Kasim, man. You know what I mean? He's a guy that can show up and not show up, you know?
Yeah.
He's older. He's an older kid now. And got to see the outcome.
Yeah. I want to try to find this fight on a stream or something somewhere because this is the fight that I really want to see this weekend. Really, this whole card. Moreno is just a guy you don't want to miss. At the Frank Irwin Center in Austin, Texas, ESPN2 Friday Night Fights, Fernando Guerrero, 21-0, versus Grady Brewer, 27-12. Guerrero is retooling underneath the new trainer. Grady Brewer is 40. I'm going Guerrero.
I mean, where's Grady been ever since he won his contendership, you know, on that series?
What the hell?
Where are you?
Well, he's 40. You know, he's probably at the old folks home, you know?
Yeah. He's got a physique. He's got the physique of a 25, 30-year-old kid, but the guy fights his age, you know?
He fights very slowly. I think, you know, and he had that win and, you know, against Bundridge, and that was it for the contender thing, and then that was it.
If I remember correctly, he did fight again, but I can't remember exactly who it was, but you know, when you go back,
he fought Lara last year in January.
There you go. See, this is the thing. I know we're probably going to end up shaving up the rest of our time here, but when you think of commissioners, I mean, God, the guy's 40 years old. He's not that active. He may look the part, but he's definitely not the part. This guy, really, honestly, against Guerrero, he shouldn't be fighting. You know what I mean?
I think it's a good fight for Guerrero and the experience
factor. Fight for Guerrero, but I mean, the fight fans are look. This is the complaint. Fight fans want to go out to see a fight, not to go see some guy that come in that looks the part. That has the armor, but the Warriors can't even hold up the armor. You know what I mean? It's like a joke of a fight.
It's an old classic car that they haven't put the engine in yet, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you turn the key and you're like, wait a minute, what's wrong, you know?
It's like going to see the movie Troy. You know what I mean? You go see the movie Troy, and it's not Brad Pitt holding the shield and the knife and under the helmet. It's Jim Carrey. You know, like, hey, this not the, the guy looks like it, but it's not him.
Yeah, that's not the Achilles that I remember.
Yeah.
but he got TKO'd by Lara. I look for Guerrero to do the same thing, and I think the onus is on him to stop a guy like this. He's 40. He's got experience.
Right.
Pick up that experience while you can in the ring and then get his ass out of there. I really think they're moving that transition from being an amateur fighter to moving to be more of a professional, meaning sitting down in your punches, shooting through the target, as opposed to just kind of pity-patting and winning fights on points in the amateurs. I think this will be further along in that process, and he gets a TKO win. Underneath that is Kareem Mayfield, 13-0-1 versus D.B. Forbes, 35-9, and about 80 years old. I think Kareem's probably going to win this, but I'm going to take Kareem by decision. I'm not on that train.
You know, Forbes got a good chin. You know, he's shown that he can take a pretty good shot. But, you know, with age, sometimes doesn't have a punch that can hold off Kareem. But I think Kareem, it's really Kareem himself in this fight. He's fighting himself. It's not going to be Forbes. It's definitely going to be Kareem. You know, I'm going to try to get on next week really quick. I'm just going to throw this in there. Austin Trout, who was successful in his win in Mexico, he came back with tested positive for marijuana.
Yeah.
And I'm a little interested about that.
They did a second test, though. Yeah, they're doing a second test. So I'm curious to see, because somebody else just tested positive for marijuana. It was Mike Lee I don't want to start throwing out names and labeling people potheads, but somebody.
Yeah, we don't want a lawsuit tested here.
Yeah, and then they went back and they retested and they went, they were wrong. So I'm going to wait and see on it. You know, it strikes me weird that a guy would be smoking weed right before defending his title. You know, that's something you do right after you've defended your title at the party.
Yeah.
Anyways, in Hidalgo, Texas, Fox Sports, Gary Russell, 15-0, versus Antonio Meza, 24-9-1. Also on Fox Sports, Omar Figueroa, 11-0-1, versus Eric Cruz, 11-6-3. At the Explanada Tecate in Navajoa, Mexico, Luis Yoriboy Campos. I wonder if this is the same one, because they've got his record all screwed up. Versus Rogelio Medina in San Rafael, Argentina, Carlos Valdomir, 46-13-6, versus Gaston Vega, 16-3. Yeah, just a little trip down memory lane for everybody. That's pretty crazy. June 18th, Saturday, 2011, at the Arena VFG in Guadalajara, Mexico. On HBO, we have Saul Alvarez, 36-0-1, versus Ryan Rhodes, 45-4. For the WBC Junior Middleweight Belt. We both made our picks on that. We're both going – actually, you're going Ryan Rhodes. I'm going Saul Alvarez.
No, I didn't say that yet.
I'm sorry.
You know what? I said I wanted to hear what the listeners had to say about it. But you know what? I think you're right. You're right, though. I am going to go with Ryan Rhodes. I think, watching him again, I think I'm going to go with him. I think he has enough there to really puzzle Canelo, make Canelo miss a lot of shots. I don't know if he'll tire him out, but I think he's gonna reserve a Canelo. He's gonna make Canelo reserve his punches and shut down on his own, and that's when he's gonna take over.
And you know what's interesting too is that Rhodes went out to Mexico about 3 weeks ago. He's been
right.
He finished out his sparring out in Mexico. He's acclimated. He's ready to go. He seems very fired up, and his camp seems very fired up for this fight. They know this is their shot. They got to make the most of it.
What I like about him too is that
he's
going in there as an opponent. He's going in there going, look, ain't gonna happen, buddy. No way, Jose.
I like that. And in support on that fight, another good little fight. Jason Litzau, 28-2 versus Adrian Broner, 20-0. I'm going Broner by late stoppage, probably like 8-9 rounds. And Dave is going Litzau, right?
I'm going Litzau. I think Litzau can outpoint him, possibly even stop him in the later rounds.
And at the Polo Deportivo La Colonia in Hunan, Argentina, Jonathan Barrios, 32-1-1 versus Celestino Caballero. That's where he went. He went to Argentina.
He went to Argentina.
34-3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna just go out on a limb here and take Celestino Caballero. I think he, you know, probably had a full training camp for this one, and he's probably gonna get it done. And then Dave, what do you think?
I'm gonna go with Celestino. I'm not gonna say he's corrected his mistakes, but God, that's a tough one. Barrios, if I'm thinking about the same Barrios, this is a guy that hasn't been active, you know what I mean? He's been having some injuries here and
not
there.
Not that Barrios.
Okay, then I'm going to go with Celestino.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're thinking about Jorge Barrios.
I thought I heard you say Jorge Barrios, that's why.
No, Jonathan Barrios.
Jonathan, so off the radar.
Radar,
exactly.
You can't just Google him and have him come up. So.
Yeah, Celestino.
He's a straight-up Argentinian fighter. I'm just looking at his box right now. He's got 32-18 with one loss by a decision to Gamboa, actually. I mean, that's where we know his name from. They fought over in Germany. So, yeah, I think Caballero is probably going to pull it out. And then at the Tuscaloosa Amphitheater in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Deontay Wilder, 16-0 versus Damon Reed, 46-15. I'm gonna go on a limb and say Deontay Wilder.
Okay, well, I want to go with Wilder, too, and we're going to have to end it because it's the end
That's
of the
it.
Show now. Anyways, it's always our pleasure. Always have a great time here with Gabriel and the callers calling in and everybody else that in the interviews we had Ann Wolf and Marco Antonio Rubio. So be sure, if you missed the show, catch it on the replay on the website. And if you have any questions and you want to or make a statement, you can always send it to leavingtheringat@gmail.com for the mailbag. Hey, once again, see you guys next week. Had a great time. Gabe, talk to you later, brother.
Yeah, man. Catch you next week.